There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long-term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
This week in Retronauts, je ne sais quoi, what Nintendo n'est-ce pas? Hello, welcome to Retronauts. Hello. With me, your Retronauts. Shut up, Dave.
Sorry.
You're not supposed to come in here. Idiot.
I thought you said hello, so I just automatically said hello back.
Idiot. Shit. God. Why do you make this so hard? This is the fifth part of the Retronauts. Ridiculously thorough. Some have said comically thorough. An investigation of Sonic 3 and Knuckles, which is being done by me, Stuart Jip, who is the host with the most. That was a Beetlejuice reference, because that's currently out, although by the time this goes out, it will probably be Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Oh, shit, there he is. Oh, no! Okay. But, yeah, it's not just me. We got the same crew back. Time after time, we got those guys.
Surprise!
We reached out. We're like, you guys, you want to be on the next part? And they're like, yeah! So, let's start from the top, because I can see them this time, which is fortunate for me, but less fortunate perhaps for them. Who's the stacked on the top of the Retronauts pile of assholes? Is it different for everyone?
Yeah,
yes, it will be.
Shay just on my screen. Shay just pointed in the one direction. Nobody
We've
is.
Run into this. I don't think we can continue. Let's just go with Dave Bulmer. Hey, Dave.
Hello, I'm Dave Bulmer. Do you remember me? I'm from Sonic the Comic, the podcast. So I talk about Sonic a lot, and that's what I'm here to do.
Hooray! And who else is with us today? I bet you can't figure it out, boomers.
It's me. It's Shamey McDonald, also known as Shuggles, the man who made an 11-hour video on Pokemon Brilliant Diamond and has somehow performed...
Wow. Wow. So, yeah, okay, this has already become an incredibly good episode. Anyway, yes, here we are again, and this is the fifth and hopefully final part of the Sonic 3 and Knuckles rundown, the casual rundown. And I've got a confession to make. This is actually not the first time that we've done this.
Oh, thank goodness. I didn't know if we were going to mention this, yes.
But no, the tension is being broken. The elephant in the room, exposed.
Trunks the elephant.
Yeah, Trunky the Elephant, or Trunks the Elephant. You know, that would be what his name is if he was in Sonic, if there's a Sonic elephant.
Well, this is retro games, so it'd be CJ the Elephant.
Oh, yeah, CJ the Elephant, of course. CJ the Elephant Antics.
Well, his full name is Truncated.
Oh, nice, good. Yeah, yeah, I like that, yeah. God, those elephants are massive, aren't they? I forgot the point I was making. I ate too much chicken today. What point was I making, Shay?
Well, we have actually recorded this podcast before.
Yes, that was it.
For the second time in about as many minutes, I'm finding myself having to say mea culpa. That was my fault. It turns out that Adobe Audition did not like me recording for a length of time, which is its
only
irritating.
Job.
Yeah, exactly, considering that is its sole purpose.
And also, we stopped halfway through. It's actually two recordings.
So that was kind of... that was kind of my bad. But the result is that we have to redo this entire podcast again, which none of us are sore about, it seems, because we get to talk more about Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and Knuckles.
Yeah.
I've forgotten everything that we said, so it's going to be great. But yep. I just wanted to make it known that there is out there a great lost episode.
Yeah, it could be better. We might do worse this time.
This might actually be worse than that, so I'm sorry about that. But where we left off, as was the subject of much heated debate earlier, is we had just finished off Lava Reef, which of course segues into
we think
Hidden Phallus, and we're all ready to jump in there, aren't we? I mean, we've said enough about that boss and that sort of finale and how outstandingly amazing it is, and how this is the beginning of the end of the game. Basically, an end game that's about four zones before the end, because they've got some real pacing going on in this game. And of course, it's interesting in a way that the end of Lava Reef Act 2 has sort of gone full circle from the original Act 1's kind of more cave, rocky lava. Act 2 is the kind of more sort of Hidden Palace looking, sort of unusual cold interior, except ironically not cold at all because of the lava ha. But then at the end of it, you're back in the floods of lava again. You're just in a sort of lava waterfall that then leads you into Hidden Phallus. And how do we feel about that, lads?
Very good about it.
Oh, I also feel very good about it, yeah.
It's so Hidden Phallus Zone isn't really so much a full zone on its own. It's kind of like just a story interlude more than anything else.
Yeah.
Something else that they even have that, you know, it's... where else are you going to find that?
Exactly. Like, it shows the dedication to the storytelling and the ongoing narrative in this game, which I think is pretty unheard of for a platformer in 1994, certainly. But even nowadays, you would very rarely get just an entire zone dedicated just to kind of moving the story along.
It would be a cutscene. It wouldn't be playable, most likely. More like an engine, maybe.
That's the thing. Like, what we're here to essentially... dip into now, plunge into now, is
thrust into
a pivotal cutscene. But when you're a kid playing it, you don't see it as something. The game is never taking itself away from you. You are playing. You're always playing, and it's telling you the story. It's a remarkable moment in this game, and we've all been looking forward to it.
We have, and I look forward to it every single time I play it.
Yeah.
And of course, as Sonic, it's not exactly long, but it's substantial. I think we should talk about the Knuckles version just to get it out of the way, because the Knuckles version is, if memory serves, is essentially just you running right and jumping into a teleporter. Am I wrong there?
Yeah. I think so.
I don't play as Knuckles that often, so my knowledge of the Knuckles side is more limited.
Yeah, I can't remember, I'm afraid. It will have been the 90s.
Because Knuckles is PU Stinky and Sonic is awesome, so...
I don't agree with that, but...
I bet he is PU Stinky, though, in real life. I bet he doesn't. You know, I bet he's very musky.
Well, foxes are famously quite smelly, aren't they? So Tails
I don't give a shit about that little wank.
Oh.
No, it's just you run right into a teleporter, which
bonk.
A lot has been made of the continuity of this, like, oh, where does the Sonic and Knuckles story fit together? Which I think is I'm not really interested in. It's
not invalid given there is a focus on story.
It's not invalid, and they have put details in to go like, well, I guess it goes here. But it doesn't, like, when they made the game, they weren't like, and then we have in the Knuckles... It's just a thing that happens to also be...
And you know, when we're talking about stuff like that, I mean, it's already been kind of... The gaff has been blown by the accidental use of Robotnik in the Flying Battery Act 2 boss, but it's a little bit like, whatever, isn't it?
What we're saying is that Knuckles' story doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I think that's to be forgiven.
Yeah. It's just an alternate play mode of a game. It's Sonic that's got the story. Knuckles.
Yeah, the Knuckles mode is a bonus.
Yeah, it's Knuckle. It's admirable. I nearly said it's Knuckles. It's admirable that they sprinkled bits of, you know, like if you're looking for storytelling, here is some. But I don't think it massively matters.
You can fill in the gaps, like kind of how you like. Like maybe he's like, oh well, he doesn't associate the robots with Robotnik at first. But anyway, I suppose the thing we need to establish is that this is the from Knuckles' perspective. I guess that's why it's so strange that Knuckles is so anemic, because like from his perspective, this is the heel turn moment. This is the moment where he realizes that, oh no, Sonic's the goodie and Robotnik's the baddie.
Yes.
Yeah. And to get to that point, I mean, Sonic's stage isn't, again, it's not particularly long, but there's some substance to it which builds up a sort of sense of anticipation, because you're running through this sort of a zigzaggy corridor.
You're sort of ascending essentially through something,
but
aren't you?
There's no, like, enemies, and you're kind of like, what's and why is it the same music, but the level has transitioned to something else? It makes it feel, it makes the continuity all the more continuous, because of that. And it's interesting, and it's unique in this game, and I have to mention it because it's great. There is a completely arbitrary secret area in this level where if you use Tails to fly Sonic up to the absolute peak that he can,
yes,
there is just this long platform that has every type of power up in the game in a row, which is, you almost feel like you've stumbled across like a debug screen or something.
Yeah.
But what they're really doing is they're doing one of my all-time favorite things in games, which is going, well, you really didn't need to do that, but hey, you did, so here's a bunch of stuff. Which is always likable. There's no clue it's up there. There's no hint. It's just you have to be the kind of stupid to think, I'm going to go up there. Just got to bloody go up there. But yeah, you make your way there. You make your way past some interesting background detail that we'll get into. And you yourself jump into a telling porter. And you end up in an interior area of the Hidden Palace where you face off against the one himself, the man who doesn't chuckle. It's only bloody Knuckles.
He flipping does chuckle. I don't think we said this in the first episode, but he chuckling is literally his introduction to Sonic. That's the first thing he does. He does chuckle just because some idiot said in a rap once that he doesn't chuckle. Now the world thinks he doesn't chuckle, and he does. It's the main thing he does.
He does chuckle. The rap is untrue.
Well, I sort of feel like maybe the rapper was just kind of hired to do a job.
Yeah.
And
that wasn't him. That wasn't really
was
Knuckles.
Was just thinking of ways to rhyme
with
words
Knuckles.
With Knuckles.
Yeah. Yep.
To be fair, given the circumstances, I think they did a fine job of rhyming with Knuckles.
Yeah.
You know?
It definitely rhymes.
It does.
I tell you what, I've always said that, actually. It does rhyme.
Yeah, I can't think of a better one, and I'm really trying. Like, you can see the gears turning, and there's nothing coming.
Yuckles, the exploding mushrooms.
My name,
from
they
Ramatris.
Call me Knuckles. Into my tippy tea, I'll get stuckle. That doesn't work. This is why I had to quit my rap career.
I've gone and left my shoes behind. I didn't do the buckles.
No, that's not bad. That's not bad. Here I come, rougher than the rest of them. The best of them, tougher than leather. You can call me Knuckles. Unlike Sonic, I don't chuckle. I'd rather flex my muscles. I'm hard as nails. It ain't hard to tell. I break them down whether they solid or frail. Unlike the rest, I'm independent since my first breath. First test, feel the right, then the worst left. Let's not do that anymore. Let's just
okay.
Just let it end. Just stop. Just let it go. Just shut up, and we'll just talk about the game. But yes, the fight with Knuckles again unique because I think it's the only time he actually fights something that isn't made of steel.
Yes.
Or metal. It's an organic fight with an actual man.
Yeah, and you don't know how that's going to go, because up till now, Sonic's whole way of fighting things is by physically destroying them, just by the fact that you just hit into them and all of his spikes makes them explode. Now we're fighting a guy. Is that going to be all right?
And it's a much more satisfying than Sonic 3's encounter with Knuckles, where he punches the Egomatic you're flying in launch base and then falls off the thing. Because until this point, that had been your final sort of that's your denouement. It's not very good, is it?
Mm.
I mean, it is good, but you know, it's not this, is it? And now it's Sonic and Knuckles, Sonic versus Knuckles. This is fucking Luke versus Darth Vader. This is the shit right here.
It's absolutely amazing. This is the at this point in the game, Knuckles shows up, and here's the thing: until now, all the way through Sonic 3 and all the way through Sonic and Knuckles, whenever there's a like zone transition or just now and then, you will meet Knuckles, and he'll be there at the side of the screen, and you'll go, oh, okay, and you'll just kind of sit back and see what he does. I think the most recent thing he did was he rolled a big boulder down some stairs at you, didn't he?
Yeah.
Now he's there, and he's like, yeah, come on then. And he attacks you, and it can hurt you. He can get you.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts gliding towards you, so he'll change what side of the screen he's on. And I think that's a big part of the communication here, that something's different. It's like Knuckles, up till this point, has just been a sprite. And now, assuming you're playing the Sonic playthrough, obviously if you can play as Knuckles, that's different. And here he breaks out of that confinement. And now he's a real boy. Now he's really there interacting with you. And you're fighting with him. And it is a huge moment. And you're fighting with him in front of this now famous, I won't go on about it, but this famous tapestry of interesting symbols. And it just, it looks so cool.
Shall we talk about the tapestry?
Yeah, we've got to talk about the tapestry. I mean, nobody who's listening to this hasn't played through this game, I imagine. If they haven't, they don't plan to.
Okay, so what you have on this tapestry, it is like the moment where the Beast of Bethlehem rises from his slumber and strikes down all the sinners. No, it's what you have is you have a mural of a giant like monster that looks like Robotnik being fought by what is clearly a representation of Supersonic. So that tapestry alone says so much. It foreshadows the end of the game. It says that the Echidnas obviously had some incredible powers of prophecy or foresight. And that they trusted these enough to like kind of write these down and try and warn people about them.
Yeah.
It says that Knuckles might be a bit of a toolbox, but
he is canonically extremely stupid.
Yes. But it's
I relate. You know, look,
it adds so much. It adds a lot of intrigue. It adds a lot of mystery. It adds a lot of background. And that's how you do it, man. That's how you do like add this kind of texture to a world in an interactive medium where you are oftentimes whizzing through it.
It's like it's like you're having the probably the most personal battle in the game, the sort of mano a mano, Sonic versus Knuckles, while in the background the tapestry is depicting the fact that you know, you don't know this initially. The first time you play this, you might not know this, but it's like personal stakes juxtaposed with cosmic stakes almost. Like, this is much, this is now myth. This is not just you versus you anymore. But if, you know, you can't turn your head, you are two sprites. If you could just look to the left, you would know that this is much bigger than you two. And it really works, I think. It's really majestic.
It's also saying, and this may be a bit flowery,
it's more
flowery than what they were intending, but like, Robotnik is literally always in the background.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, Knuckles is not the villain of the piece.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if that, because I've always wondered why they put that there. Because it is a strange thing to be like, we all think it's cool because we know what comes later in the game, and you have to work to get to the bit that comes later in the game that this tapestry resembles. But when you're first playing it, no, you don't know that. And I'm like, what made them put it there? And that might be why. It's just to make, like, to remind you that this is something. This little fight between these two guys doesn't need to happen. There's something bigger.
Yeah, it's not necessary. It's all based on manipulation. Manipulation, presumably, that involves this whatever the hell this cataclysm is that you're seeing in the background. Having just played through what is essentially a cataclysm when the lava reef got absolutely demolished.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, when you fight Knuckles, he doesn't pull any shit that someone playing as Knuckles couldn't pull, except maybe jumping slightly higher, I think.
Oh, does he really?
You are essentially fighting. It's like another. It's a duel boss. It's a duel. It's not a fight like Robotnik. It's not just he's there.
No.
You hit him 8 times. He doesn't really react to you. Knuckles blocks you. He'll put his knuckles up so that you can't.
Yes,
hurt him,
he has a blocking move, and it's actually really a pain in the ass, isn't it? You know, when you're trying to get him, and he's just like, "Put up," you can't.
Insta shield is your friend. Insta shield will break that block.
Oh, will it?
I think it does. Yeah. That's how I usually beat him. But then once you defeat him, he doesn't explode. You know,
no.
He slumps down on the ground, and you're like, "Oh shit!"
Yeah, I find
Did
it
I just
really.
Kill Knuckles?
I find it really sad when you get him because. He's just there on the ground, like flat on the ground, on his back, nose up in the air. And he was just a guy that was, and we're about to find out in the next scene, basically, what Knuckles is here for, why he's being aggressive, and what his job and meaning of his entire life is.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, Sonic just beat him up. I find it sad. You know, he's just trying his best.
Well, he got in Sonic's way, didn't he? You know.
It will.
Because, it's quite a deft trick to kind of turn animosity into sympathy.
Yeah. Yes.
But, and again, it's kind of like, I think it reinforces, like, you see for the first time, like, Knuckles' culture is really in focus. And so you see, oh, I am a trespasser here, or Sonic is a trespasser here, and so is Robotnik, even more egregiously.
But that's reinforced so much, obviously, when you do move to the right past Knuckles and realize, oh, I've been nicking his stuff.
Yeah, because what happens now is as Knuckles is... But Knuckles basically is awoken by a great rumbling, and all these sort of puffs of smoke are going up and down the screen. You can tell things are going wrong here, and he suddenly doesn't care about Sonic anymore. He's got little surprise lines around his head. He runs off to the right, and you go with him. And you find out that you have this whole time been right next to the flipping, only the flippy dipping Emerald Chamber, where we've been going whenever we jump into those rainbow rings now that we're collecting the super emeralds. That room where all the Chaos Emeralds are on their stands growing out of flowers, and the giant Master
the
Emerald.
The super emeralds.
What did I say?
Chaos Emeralds.
That's interesting, because I really deliberately said super emeralds, and evidently the wrong word came out. Yeah.
It did.
And there they are, and that's where you are. You go in this room, and then you're like, oh, this is in a place? I've gone there the long way round this time?
It's a really cool moment of just kind of full circle, oh, shit. And, of course, you know, it explains him coming out of that area in Mushroom Hill when he pokes his head around the door to make sure no one's looking. Shuts it's like this is him. He's hiding his stuff. He's burying his little acorns for the winter.
You know? Well, that's because again, that gives the whole thing a lot of. Here's that word again, continuity. Because up until this,
I was worried you were going to say something else. Just then, go on.
You don't. I know which word you were thinking. You don't. Before this point, you don't know where you've been going.
Yeah.
You jump into the giant ring. For all you know, this could be a magic dimension. Yeah. But no, it's a real place. And now, like Dave says, you've come the long way around. You've literally just gone there by running across the whole island.
It gives you this great feeling of recontextualizing the whole context of the whole thing you've been doing up till now.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the many, just like, I don't like using this word because it's shit and stupid, but impactful moments in this game.
What's wrong with calling it impactful?
It's rubbish. It sounds stupid. Oh, this was impactful.
I disagree.
An idiot made that word up in like 2003 to describe Batman Begins or something. And everyone just went, oh yeah, let's keep using that. It's like people saying out of pocket. That doesn't mean what we think it means. It means I haven't got any money.
Right.
Change it back.
Okay.
I'm with you on the out of pocket one. And we'll continue this debate later. I'm fine with impactful.
Does mean that. Yeah.
Oh, that was impactful. Well, I couldn't think of a better word to say, so I'm just going to go with impactful. Not having it. The only time I want to hear about something being impactful is if it's my bowel.
You could set your watch by that.
Unfortunately, you can't set your watch by mine, because it's impacted. The Retronauts, difference. So it's difficult to find the words other than what we've already used, I suppose, because
impactful.
It's huge. It's huge. It's a very impactful, yeah. But it's huge, this shit. It's absolutely huge. That's what you said. It's seismic. It's
Seismic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, oh, very nice. Yeah. It's just coming off lava reefs, just incredibly intimidating endgame.
Mm.
What they're doing there is they're establishing that establishes the threat, and this establishes the stakes.
Yeah.
And when you put those two things into, when they tell together like this, and you realize again, oh, that fat bald egg guy isn't fucking around this time, is he? he's really on one. He's off. He's gone off on one, isn't he?
And how does it do that? What happens here is we see the Eggomatic come along, or whatever you want to call it, the Eggmobile, whatever you want to call it, and not used to. You don't have to do that face. It comes along, and out of it comes a little grabber, and it grabs the Master Emerald, and it wrenches it.
Like a wee claw machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it rips it out of its moorings. Gotcha. It's kind of growing out of a cluster of other smaller crystals made of the same stuff, yeah. And they start to, like, rain off it and spray away. And Knuckles can't believe what's happening, so he does some air guitar. It does
yeah.
a really cool...
It is air guitar, but obviously what he's doing is he is furiously shaking his massive fist
yeah.
at Robotnik.
I make fun, but it's genuinely dead yeah. good. And Robotnik does.
It's great.
He runs off with the Master Emerald on his claw. And Knuckles is trying to hit him, and he's kind of... That encourages you, so you start to hit him as well. But you don't
know... That's what
I
love about it.
Knuckles can't yeah. jump high enough. It's canon.
That's what I absolutely love about this bit, is yeah. that, like, Robotnik's nicking the Master Emerald, and sure, it's a scripted sequence, so you can't actually, like, stop him from doing this.
No.
But I defy you, every single time you play this level, not to be jumping into Robotnik with all your might.
Yeah, yeah, because you're playing, it's like seen it. It's like you've put yourself into the movie, like, and you are... acting what you want to be happening, what would be happening, which is that Sonic and Tails would be leather in that fight.
This moment makes you, as an adult, but especially as a kid, it makes you start to, like, half act, half actually feel the drama of the moment and go, like, no, I'm gonna, because Knuckles is such a noble figure and he's being so betrayed here. And he's dushing Robotnik with his spin attack fist and Sonic, you join in to try and get him. And Knuckles, in this moment of last desperation, Knuckles, like, just grabs bodily onto the Master Emerald. He just, like, flings out both of his arms, grips onto it, and just clings on. Like, that's all he's got. It's ineffectual because Robotnik's machine has got this thing in its grip, but he's on there. He's like, you know, you have to kill me then.
Can I just interrupt and have a slight woke moment? Because I've just realized that I keep calling Robotnik a fat idiot. And there's actually nothing wrong with being fat. So I just want to apologize to all my fat friends. And, you know, I've modeled my own appearance and, you know, weight on that of Dr. Robotnik. But I probably shouldn't use that as, like, an archetype like that, you know. I just wanted to have a little woke moment there.
That's very good. It's unavoidable, though, that all of the media at the time massively used that, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
The main thing, you know, that was wrong with Robotnik.
He is fat. He is an idiot, but he's not an idiot because he's fat.
No. Is he an idiot? I mean, he's like a really genius
idiot. No, he's got an IQ of 9,999 pence or something. It's really high. I don't know. But, Knuckles jumps onto the Master Emerald, clings onto it for dear life, and he gets 500,000 volts up his ass.
Out of the Agamatic, snake these weird little snaky cables that jab into
tendrils.
Yeah. And they jab into Knuckles, and he gets zapped, and you see his whole little skeleton. While you and Tails are both smashing the thing, and that makes him fall off to the ground again, sort of unconscious, and then you feel so bad for him.
Mm-hmm. It's such a scramble. It's like all of you just scrambled, like, wailing on this guy while... Oh, very good. This is why you're the host with the most.
Yeah.
Like, you're all jumping at him, and, like, Knuckles is jumping at him, and then, like, Robotnik's like, oh, Jesus, and then, like, better electrocute this one guy, you know, like...
Yeah. And Robotnik's like, you know...
Robotnik's like, oh, lummy.
Jesus.
Like, you know, it's frantic. It's effective.
But it's like, God, we haven't even got to the really good bit yet, have we? But it's that betrayal communicated... flawlessly with no dialogue, and we've only just got started, basically. Yeah. You know exactly what's happening. I mean, you know, the fact that the game is called Sonic and Knuckles and not Sonic versus Knuckles does already kind of clue you in that he's going to end up being a protagonist, like Sonic and Tails, you know, Sonic and Knuckles. It's obviously his new buddy, to some extent, I think it's worth noting.
Yes, I don't remember feeling like it was a head-to-head, to the finish kind of game.
So, following that, you're still... if you're me, you've now gone next to Knuckles and crouched as if you're looking at him.
Yeah, like, oh, hell concerned. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because you're still
fully
acting.
You are fully puppeteering using the up and down keys.
It's full on, like, Windows 3 and Movie Maker stuff going on right now. And then Knuckles eventually gets up and... No, is that where the floor collapses?
That's where the floor collapses. While he's unconscious, the floor collapses.
Because that was evidently a load-bearing Master Emerald that was stolen by Robotnik. So the floor collapses and Knuckles still, I mean, that would be really dangerous, out for the count, falls down. Sonic and Tails fall down, you end up in this sort of similar sort of basin kind of chamber you can't get out of.
Yeah.
Eventually, he comes around. He has his little where am I kind of thing. Then he goes over to like the left wall, looks at you, and like beckons you. He's like, come on, like follow me. And it's like the light's going on, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's you've gone like Jesus. The efficiency of the storytelling to do all of that with no.
It's a powerful moment of friendship between these characters. They all realize, all of them have realized now what's actually going on. That Knuckles has been fooled all along. He's not a bad guy after all. This is the moment where Sonic and Tails know this. This is the moment where Knuckles realizes that these guys are against Robotnik, and Robotnik just stole the Master Emerald. So wait a minute, he was lying to me all along. Now they're a team. No words are used. It's all just a puppet show with these little sprites. It is brilliant.
So then Knuckles, he thumps down the wall with his mighty strength. Mm-hmm. You follow him through there into another chamber with the teleporter, like the one that you've already used, which I don't remember if it activates or if Knuckles turns on a switch to activate it or something. Knuckles just jumps into it, and then you follow him in. He doesn't tell you to, but you just do, obviously.
And he's like, on the floor panting. He's like, flipping.
Yeah, he's out. Like, this is taking all his strength.
And then basically, he jumps into this thing, and you go into it, and the screen goes black, and it says Sky Sanctuary Zone. And as the camera fades back in again, and you're like, what's the Sky Sanctuary Zone? You are looking at the beam of the teleporter as the camera pans up, following this beam of light into the sky. The clouds parallax down to show how high up you're going, and you end up in what I can only describe as heaven.
And no, you.
No
time for that.
Too serious for that now.
Yeah, you didn't succeed. You didn't pass.
Yeah, doesn't matter. All of that's gone out the window. Mechanics don't. Those mechanics don't matter anymore. Isn't that great? Isn't that so good to communicate the urgency by forsaking the fluff completely, basically.
Yeah.
Another way in which they tighten it. So you're launched into Sky Sanctuary Zone, which is the music kicks, and the music is just like,
It is beautiful.
It's like hearing Crash Test Dummies for the first time. And you land, and you can see in the background the Death Egg has launched. You can see all the Egg Robo, which is the robots you fight in this level, powering off this thing.
Yeah, you see the Death Egg come up through the clouds in the background and launch these little guys. And you don't know what they're going to be, but they're Egg Robos. It's amazing.
I think I may have made this comparison already, so I'm really sorry, Retronauts fans, if I have, but I sort of compare this to the part where he kills you in Portal 2 in terms of the fact that when you get to that part of Lava Reef, the end of the game is that's the end of the game. You're in the end of the game. And this is another like half hour or 45 minutes of game, but that's all ending. And that's what I think the part where he kills you through to the end of Portal 2 genuinely compares to, because it's another in everything happens in the game while you're doing stuff. I think it's as good as that, if not better. It's more efficient, certainly, but quite like Portal 2, you go to the moon now. You go to Sky Sanctuary, and Knuckles hits a switch, doesn't he? Raise the bridge so that you can continue. Yeah. And then if you crouch in a certain area, he'll start pointing for you to go, but it's really hard to trigger in a really specific spot. It's just a little Easter egg.
Yeah.
Little Easter egg there for the fans,
But it's like that moment where the Death Egg like rises up in the background. Mm-hmm. It's like, once again, the scale... The threat's been contextualized.
Yeah.
And I just love that it's like all these like sorties of egg robos just like pouring off it. And for the rest of the level, as you're rushing through, these egg robos are like crashing in from the background.
Isn't there one that The first one, maybe might be the first one, there's like a tunnel that you take with all the animal friends running out of it, like,
yes,
as if they're escaping from it, and then
it's
kind of bursts
out. It's like a little tower, and you go like, well, why are the animals running out of this tower? And then out comes this Egg Robo,
Yeah, an Egg Robo, if you've played the Knuckles side, you'll recognise as what the piloting
boss
is.
Oh, yeah, well, we're being disgusting fanboys and saying Egg Robos. Guys, they're like robots that look like Dr. Eggman. What it is it's an escalation.
Why are we calling them Egg Robos, then? Isn't that what they're called, Egg Robos?
Yes, that's what they're called, but it's just listeners won't know that.
Oh, sorry. When you said we're being disgusting fanboys, I thought that was wrong or something.
No, it's right. Just that normal people listening won't know what we mean by Egg Robos. And anyway, but there is a point to be made here, which is that this is a...
No normal people are listening to this.
No, okay, you're right there. This is a point of escalation in the story, though, because up until now, in Sonic, Sonic 2, Sonic 3, Sonic CD, all the time, Robotnik's robots have always been like, what if I made a robot of a crab? What if I made a robot of a bug? This is, what if I made a robot of me and gave it a gun? These are soldiers. These are egg and soldiers is what these are.
Very nice. that's what it should have been called.
Yep. Mm. These are Robotnik soldiers, and it's you're on a higher plane now. You're fighting them for real.
That sense of just breakneck pace, like you are still, though that the sort of the cutscene portion has ended, you're still playing the story. You're always playing the story.
Yep.
Up until that, you're still playing a game.
Yeah.
But now you're playing a story. And now you're doing something. And, it just works on every level, doesn't it?
You are desperate to get this story finished, to get this guy avenged, to sort everything out. You've seen the thing that just launched a minute ago. You saw it blink and everything turned to lava, so you know what it's going to do to the planet.
And I think this is what makes the Death Egg still... I'm trying to avoid saying the word impactful now.
No, but don't just ignore me. Please just ignore me.
It's like, this is what allows the Death Egg to still have a sense of tension and threat, despite being a very, very obvious Star Wars spoof.
Yeah.
Right? Like, not a particularly clever Star Wars spoof, but just...
Silly.
It's the fact that the game is treating it seriously. Like, it could not be a Star Wars pastiche. And if the game treated it in exactly the same way, it would retain its impact.
I
think also it might be worth noting, though we may have already noted it, and again I apologise, the fact that it is it's continuing the Sonic 2 story to an extent.
Yes.
This thing's back and it's bad. You know, it's Return of the Jedi, isn't it? I mean, it's better than Return of the Jedi, but it's Return of the Jedi. And Sky Sanctuary itself, the actual zone, I think it's not the most... I mean, it's one act, isn't it? It's just one stage that you go through several segments of. And what I love about this, if you don't mind me slightly skipping ahead, is I don't think we can talk in too much macro detail about the actual stage design, because it's very vertical, it's very bounce on clouds, run up collapsing walkways. But what I love about this is you're like, holy shit, the Death Egg's back, Robotnik's playing for keeps. Mm. There's no way it could get any worse. Mecha Sonic. Here's Mecha Sonic.
Yeah.
No introduction, no explanation. He's just set Mecha Sonic on you. And it's got that sense of climax, because you're doing Sonic 1 boss again. Like, oh shit. This, you know, it's a deliberate throwback.
That's right, yeah. Weirdly, old Robotnik bosses come back, but they're driven by this warped version of Metal Sonic instead.
Well, because it's that, like, because I think Metal Sonic himself is tying it back to Sonic 2 and Sonic CD, and the old boss is coming back is obviously, like, you know, the Sonic 1 boss is a tie to Sonic 1, obviously. Yeah. But what that is suggesting is that this is not just the end of this game. This is the end of this era of
this trilogy,
Sonic the Hedgehog.
I make no hesitation. I think of this as the final, like, the end of the trilogy, and like since this game. They've just kept making Sonic games, but like these guys haven't. This is the end.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, it's that sensation of just like, as well for me, it reminds me a little bit of, and I'm sorry for the obscure comparison, Gradius 5 on the PlayStation 2, a shooter by Treasure, the fifth game in the Gradius series. On very early in the game, you face Big Core, which is the boss of Gradius 1, and you take it apart with consummate ease. And I think what they're doing here is they're going, you see this shit? This isn't even good enough to be a final boss anymore. The real final boss is going to It's just, yeah. You know, you don't even know what you're about
to
see.
You watch out. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Look how far you've come.
And yeah. I think it's awesome. It's just like, you beat the Sonic 1 boss, you beat the Sonic 2 boss, which is the Metropolis Zone boss, with the orbiting satellite, with the satellites, which isn't an easy boss. I just want to throw that out there. You beat them, they only take 6 hits each, so they're not full boss material. And then you're like, okay, so number 3 is going to be like the big lad, isn't it? And they make you wait a long time, because this level doesn't have a final boss unless you're playing as Knuckles, you know. And not to skip that far ahead, obviously, but every time you beat Mecha Sonic, it is Mecha Sonic, isn't it? There's like 3 different ones. Silver Sonic and Sonic 2, Metal Sonic and CDM, Mecha Sonic in this, right? You just want to make sure I get that right.
Yes, but this level
does have longer Silver Sonic in Sonic 2 either. It's also Mecha
Sonic. I know, they've changed that now.
Is that like a retcon? Okay.
Yeah. It's like a retcon that the fans have done.
Silver Sonic was in Sonic on the Master System. Sonic
I think that's the point. Yes. I think they needed to separate them out.
We've got to get this stuff right, otherwise they're going to destroy us on the 4chans.
Yeah, but they're wrong. It was called Silver Sonic. And we all know it was, and we've got the guidebooks and the magazines. It was called Silver Sonic.
Yeah.
It was probably just that probably Sega Power was wrong and everyone else copied them or something.
Good old Sega Power.
What I really respect about this as well is that this throwback is not itself the climax.
Yeah.
And that is something that I think a lot... The pacing there is immaculate. It knows when to drop this throwback that like contextualizes like the last 3 games and makes you realize that you're building up to the climax of these 3 games. It makes sure that itself is not the ending, because that would be very disappointing. And that's the thing.
Yeah, with Sonic Advance. Sorry, go on.
That's the thing that I think a lot of games or a lot of different things kind of, that's a trap that they fall into is going, oh, nostalgia gets people, bam, that's it, that's your ending there.
It's very unobtrusive nostalgia. It's just,
yes,
it is nostalgia. It's nostalgia that also forwards the story, and it forwards the stakes, and it forwards everything. It's just, from now on, you're just a complete kineticism, just all the way to the end. There's no okay stop. Everything is informing the panic that you're facing and the danger that you're facing, and the way that every time you beat one of those bosses, you then get onto a teleporter and ascend further, up, up and up into the heavens. You're not on the back of a biplane now. You got to make your own way up there. You know, there is no plane. Like, Christ, it's good, isn't it? Isn't it a good game?
It really, really is. And the entire time you're doing this, this Sky Sanctuary, which is, it seems to be like this construction of floating stones, like Laputa, a castle in the sky.
Yeah, I think that's what it's going for.
Constantly floating up and down. And as you are running up it, the egg robos are destroying it behind you, and like the whole thing is collapsing, and that culminates in the end when you destroy Mecha Sonic, and the impact of it exploding destroys the last vantage point on the island. So this ancient, beautiful, like floating city has been destroyed.
Yeah, there's not a trace of it. You get to it from literally the last brick as it's falling through the air. You leap from it, and it's like, it couldn't be more exciting. It would be impossible for it to be more exciting.
It's absolutely fantastic.
I'd actually forgotten that you fight Mecha Sonic properly.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said there isn't a final boss of the level, but there is. It's him.
But the reason why, just to slightly sidetrack, is when you play it as Knuckles, obviously you don't really get the Sky Sanctuary, you get like one screen, but I think they sort of make up for that by doing something really cool with Mecha Sonic.
Really cool.
Yes.
We should talk about this. You do fight Mecha Sonic. You fight Mecha Sonic and you beat Mecha Sonic. Not easily. He's not even easy in his original form, I would say. I mean, he is for me because I'm skilled, but it is quite hard. But then when you beat him, the friggin' Doomsday theme kicks in.
Yeah.
He revs up and jumps on the Master Emerald and becomes super Mecha Sonic, like, you're like, oh, he's invincible now. that ain't good, you know. And then he's literally flying in the air, blasting enormous energy balls at you that make the most terrifying like noise of I am eliciting enormous power. It's like, wah! Oh, it's awesome. And you've got to avoid him or evade him until he turns briefly back into normal Sonic, normal Mecha Sonic. In which case, he has to then jump back on the Master Emerald and power up again. And that's also kind of storytelling for the Sonic side. If you end up doing that first, you know, it's explaining something that the Sonic side doesn't explain, which is what this thing does. I mean, you know, it makes you super by collecting all the super emeralds, but you might not have them at this point. Yeah. You could get here and not have them. So,
well, what I love is that Super Mecha Sonic is running on the same rules as every other super character, as like Super Sonic and Super Knuckles.
Mm.
It's like you have to power up. And then you have to collect the rings, and the rings constantly tick down. Your power constantly drains until you revert back to normal when you hit zero. So Super Mecha Sonic is also doing that. And so it's like, if you've unlocked Super Sonic or Super Knuckles before this point, you kind of instinctively know how this works.
Mm. Yeah. Or indeed Super Sonic from Sonic 2 when he first appeared as well. It's playing off that as well. And that's, I really enjoy that boss fight, and in a way I think it's kind of a shame that you can't play against him as Sonic normally. But that's, that, you know, vive la difference. It's great. I think that's... I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to say about Sky Sentry. I feel like we've covered it quite effectively, to be honest.
Yeah.
So it is only one act. It is a very memorable act. There's not much in the way of sort of secrets, because at this point the game is... Again, it's eschewed that kind of fluff. This is a very pointed, you have to go now, this is important.
It would cut... Yeah, that's exactly it. It would feel kind of wrong of you to be picking and poking about. You've got to be running. And that's why you have this feeling of things falling apart. And what I like is the way... I haven't been back to check if this is true, but I always get the sense that the collapse of it is gradual and happens in phases, where, like, at the start, you just seem to be in this beautiful place. And then gradually, like, big fore and background parts of it just start going up and down and sinking, and it's splitting apart without necessarily collapsing. And then by the end...
As you go up, you do start finding more collapsing platforms, running up more collapsing bridges. Those grey platforms that collapse when you jump on them.
Yeah.
It's probably worth noting, because we're not going to have a chance to otherwise, that if you do somehow accidentally fall down and land on solid ground, you can end up having to fight Mechasonic again, which is quite funny. Yeah, you can, yeah.
I've never done that.
Yeah, I have, because I'm rubbish. But as opposed to being skill earlier, I'm now rubbish.
Yeah.
But... I'm a man of much hypocrisy. They do eschew the secrets, as I mentioned, and then, of course, once you're in the Death Egg, while you are still racing against time, the secrets kind of return. It's much, because it suits the theme of that, which is like you're in this huge industrial maze, you know, where you can pick around and find nooks and crannies. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. The Death Egg is the next zone. And this is not your granddaddy's Death Egg. This is not two screens and two bosses, okay? This is enormous. This is like the rebuilt, terrifyingly vast, Spike Bonker festooned Death Egg.
Spike Bonker? Yeah. And this is the bit that starts with you running up the final crumbling tower of the very last brick, as you said. You jump off that, and you jump onto the Death Egg as it's rising. It is baller. It's a really, really good bit.
You jump fully off screen, it fades to black, and then the Death Egg music kicks in, and you're on the Death Egg. And it's like, you fill in the blank yourself. You're like, okay, good, they made it.
I know, and I always think you see them, like, jump in and cling on and crawl in, but you don't.
Well, it's interesting, because most of the game you do actually get a more direct transition than that.
Yeah.
But this, I think, makes perfect sense for the tension as well. If you see the fade to black, you're like, oh, shit. And then, it's like, oh, God.
There's a good 2 or 3 seconds after you've jumped off that final brick of just empty sky, including no Sonic and Tails, because they've jumped off the screen. You're like, what happened? And this happened. You're in the Death Egg.
And of course, you're thinking, geez, I hope Knuckles is okay now.
Because
there's no more Knuckles till the end of the game. Like, you don't see him again.
I guess he just glid down to...
He glid down. Yeah, he glid. But then the Death Egg, yes, God. It's hard to know where to start, isn't it? The Death Egg is full of gimmicks you've never seen before that are... odd, strange things, lasers that become platforms, lasers that don't become platforms but carry you through the sky anyway, and just this real outrageous sense of, like, okay, now I'm in the shit. Like, I am, this is the Viper's Den.
Laser,
very much so.
Laser technology missile hell zone, isn't it?
And I think that.
And with this music that's like, we've heard it enough times that we're like, oh yeah, we can hum along. But the first time you hear it, you're like, is this even music?
It's
just
so
like
good,
aggressive
though.
And nasty and attacking.
It's like pretty much like nothing else in the game.
Yeah, it's
perfect
amazing.
For that level. I'm very fond of the sort of. I think that there is a very deliberate play on your memories of Sonic 2 here, because Sonic 2's Death Egg, as I've just said, is just about two screens as an extension of the Wing Fortress zone, where you fight Mecha Sonic or Silver Sonic or Metal Sonic or whatever the fuck, and then you fight the Death Egg robot. And when you get here and you see Death Egg, you're like, oh, it's the final boss, maybe. You might just think, final boss time.
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh no, there's quite a bit of game left here.
Yeah.
Oh boy. And
it's a full two-actor, right?
It's a big one. Two big acts, and also one of the levels where you could genuinely run out of time if you're not careful.
It is enormous, and it's confusing, and it's overwhelming. And like it gives the impression of being in the belly of the beast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that sensation is driven home, I think, by the scale of the background. Like, God, I think it's especially in Act 2, it's like, we were talking about Return of the Jedi earlier, and it's like the Death Star reactor at the end of that film, and how just the scale of it, how absolutely incredibly enormous
that's
that
clearly
thing.
What it's based on, isn't it? It's that. And it seems so far away, with a very subtle curve to the back wall that implies that everything you're doing is in the wall of the Death Egg. You know, it's like it goes all the way around. There's absolutely a huge world.
I think also, though, it really does do a good job of communicating that sort of you're not supposed to be here sort of feeling, because there are segments where they're not air ducts, but they feel like air ducts, where you're flying through almost the walls, hitting junction points and pressing down, left, down, right. And it's like, you're storming this place. This is not like a casual stroll through the Death Egg where he's waiting for you. He doesn't want you there. He doesn't maybe know you're there yet.
People aren't meant to be here. This is for machinery.
But then I get the sensation, and this is just me skipping ahead, but we can come back.
Mm-hmm.
The boss of the first act, to me, is the representation of like, oh shit, he knows you're here now, because that's like a big security eye.
It's
like
an eye.
Just a big red eye.
Yeah.
Because the way you get to it, of course, is you go through that unusual segment where you're floating and you have to bounce and hit the switches on each side of this.
Gravity is a gimmick here, which is so appropriate, isn't it?
You're in space.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. And because that comes into play much more in Act 2, of course, but like, it's gravity plus magnetism. Is a thing here. There's electricity everywhere, and if you have a thunder shield, you can take quite a lot of, not shortcuts, but it really helps you out. And it's actually one of the few places in the game, I think, where the thunder shield is directly beneficial in that respect. I mean, it's the best shield because you double jump with it, but, your mileage may vary on that one.
And drawing rings as well, yeah.
And drawing rings. But here it's like, oh, if you have the thunder shield, you can walk on the live electric floors.
Yes,
of course you can.
You can, yeah. Otherwise you would have to wait for a little trolley to slowly go across it all. Whereas here you can just
Sonic 3 and Knuckles is, I talked about this on the last episode a little bit, but they don't ever break the verisimilitude. It's like the world's best GM. They'll never say you can't do that.
Yeah.
Because if it makes sense that you could do that, they'll let you do it. That's what's so good. One of the things that's so great about this game, it's it's got glitches out the butthole, and they've all been found and heavily documented, but a normal playthrough of this game, you're going to run into bits where you think,
I believe you, but
oh, there's no way I'm doing this right. Oh, I am doing it right. Mm. And
but it's just like this enormous, like unknowable, like cosmic factory.
Mm.
And you don't know to what purpose, you don't know to what end, but it's just like, it really is like the heart of what Robotnik is about.
And the hostility is unmatched as well from the levels, from the sparking electricity to the small conveyor belt flying platforms that go back and forth while they are running as conveyor belts. So you have to constantly move not to be pushed off them while they go across deadly electric, while you're being shot at by gun turrets on the walls. This is not an easy level to play at all. It has those astonishing bits where you get picked up by a, I don't know what to call it, but they launch you in
the
rings, yellow rings. For 15 minutes, which is, if memory serves, on the last recording of this, I did complain about that, but I've since decided I was wrong and they're good, actually. So it's fine. You know, it's worked out. But everything about it is just very sort of unknowable and hostile, I think. Yeah. And the sensation of that is built so well in Act 2, which obviously we'll get to. But it does a great job of not just communicating this isn't going to be like you think it's going to be, and it's so much more besides. It delivers as a final level in every regard. And, you know, if you haven't got all the Chaos Emeralds, this is the final level.
Yeah.
But let's not get into that yet.
So Act 2 then, the background in this one, it's not the reactor anymore, it disappears, it's just the planet deep below now. It's like you're...
Oh yeah,
do you remember?
Yeah.
The way it starts is perfect, because you defeat the very... I'm going to say it, this boss is hard. That Death Egg security robot is nailed.
I think it may be the hardest boss in the game.
I don't know how to do it. I do it every time, but I don't know how. I do it by, you know, losing rings and grabbing them again.
When you defeat him, you run to the sort of middle. Again, the floor explodes and you fall down and you land on a small platform in space.
Yeah.
Like, you realize, I mean, you knew you were in space, but now you're really in space. You can see that you're in space and you were just one, like, an inch away from horrible death.
Yeah.
And then the game launches you up again. The music kicks back in, except this time they've picked... I think it's pitched up slightly. Mm. It's got a different mix, which sounds even more urgent than the last one.
It's kind of like... It's more hollow. It's kind of a little deeper and a little, like, kind of... The mix is less full. It just feels a little more, like, kind of, like, sinister. Like, again, it's kind of, like, building to something. This isn't quite as energetic now. This is a bit more, like, okay, like, you're really, really heading towards the final confrontation here.
And Act 2 throws into the mix gravity again by having segments where gravity is simply reversed and you are running on the ceiling. And now I want to say this is the first time this crops up in a Sonic game.
I think so, yeah.
I think so.
Because it does make its return in the Advance series and such. But this time,
they do it a lot in Advance and Rush. Yeah. It kind of becomes just kind of the staple thing, which... after a while, it was kind of like, yeah, okay, we get it, you know.
But here it's perfect.
Well, here it makes sense, because you're in space. You can see you're in space. The backdrop is just space and a planet. So, yeah, you spend about half the level, in my memory, upside down. But it contextually, it makes sense, because you're in a place with no gravity.
Mm. It's and also, of course, is setting you up for the boss, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
It's establishing the rules for that as well, to some extent. But... gosh, the segment that I always remember in this level is that there's a part where you have to bounce up a quite high shaft while going from side to side, and springs just pop out of the wall.
Oh, yeah.
They're not there initially, but you're upside down.
Yeah.
You are going up, but going down at the same time, and it really does sort of communicate this kind of, oh my, what, this is crazy. Like, what is going on? Like, we're through the looking glass here, you know. It's like a cherry on top of this perfection. It's so perfect, isn't it? Now, we haven't talked about some of the sort of smaller elements of this stage, like the badniks in these stages are sort of fairly aggressive as well, and have the comic. There's like these ones that are sort of like upside down drills with eyes that have spike balls. They're a bit like the Orbinauts from Launch Base Zone, you know, the guys with four spike balls. They only have one, and they're called spike bonkers, and that's really funny, isn't it? Because
it has
the word bonk in it.
Yep.
There are also these badniks that are a bit like the Asterons, the starfish from Metropolis Zone, except they sort of teleport.
Yes.
They go like, and they're just there, and you can't hit any of their cardinal sort of sides because you will take damage.
Well,
and there's something quite brilliantly threatening about that.
The thing about this, the comparison with Metropolis, I think, is spot on. It's a really, really good comparison to make, because I hate Metropolis. I dislike playing that level immensely.
Oh, yeah.
I love this level.
Yeah.
Like, they have found a way, I think, to balance difficulty with Sonic's moveset, you know? Because in Metropolis, the way that they managed to get you, the way they managed to make it difficult in that level is essentially by ambushing you all the time. Yeah. You can't move 2 feet without something coming out and going, ah, gotcha. And so it's just this constant slog, this start-stop. Yeah. The Death Egg Zone is not like that. I always feel like when I take damage in this level that it is my fault.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree totally, yeah. I mean, I feel that about more or less the whole game. I think it's perfectly designed, basically, with very few moments where I think, oh, come on, that's not really fair. The thing is, despite all of that, it's quite tough to know what to say about it because it's so good. There's nothing to pick at. It's just the quintessential finale, you know, and it's not even the finale. You know, they actually do top this with something completely insane. But we should talk about the boss, I think, the final.
Well, kind
I'm doing air quotes. We should talk about that.
The four final bosses.
The first of four final bosses, yeah, quite so. Each finaler than the last. And what it is here is a big egg. And it's, yeah, you like that, didn't you?
Dave? I like that,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, didn't you? Yeah, it's always like this. It's always like this here. It's always like this. And what it does is it essentially hovers from left to right, dropping off these little kind of rolling landmine things.
Yeah, little carp guys.
And the way I used to do it is on each side of the level there are transporters that will put you on the ceiling and back on the terra firma and obviously vice versa.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said vice versa when I'd already covered both, but it's okay. It doesn't matter. It's just directional difference. And if you
did point out that it was obviously vice versa, so I think...
If you zip your way up to the ceiling and one of those bombs is underneath it, they will take damage because normally they're following you with these little bumper things so you can't jump in and hit it.
Yeah,
they're
just
stalking you with them. There's no way to damage it directly.
The big guy in the middle, you can't spin attack him because of his shield.
There's no way to damage it directly. So the way I used to do this is I would just go in and out of the doors until it's sort of coincidentally being killed.
Right, right.
And then I found out, possibly during the first recording of
this
one, someone told me.
This is familiar, yeah.
That you can spin dash them when they're on the floor and they'll jump up and hit it. I had no idea you could do that.
Yeah. When, so the thing is, when they're on the floor one way up.
Yeah.
Well, because this is the thing, it's like they pop out. Because you're constantly reversing gravity, they pop out and they land on their wheels. But if you reverse gravity while they're on the floor, they go up to the ceiling and they're on their back. Mm. And you can spin dash them then and knock them up into the boss.
Yeah.
And what that but the thing is that if it's the other way around, if they're the correct way up, spin dashing into them bounces you back. It doesn't damage you.
Mm. Yeah.
And so what it means is it's this really kinetic kind of puzzle boss, you know, it's like it is a puzzle boss. There's like some logic to it that you need to figure through and figure out the rules of it, but it's not like push these blocks into place, you know. It doesn't destroy the pace to make
not,
you think
it's not the first, it's not the Sandopolis Act 1 boss, basically. It's a good puzzle boss. And what I like about that is that it does actually, I mean, I've timed out there before, you know, and that is the last thing you want when you're trying to save the world is to run into a puzzle boss. And it's the perfect way to end a level that's been complete high-octane platforming and speed is suddenly there's something vaguely cerebral to deal with.
But also
it sort of mirrors the switch but from the first act as well, in the sense of, like, well, how do I do this? For love of Christ, I need to move forward.
But also you can do it the way I used to do it, which is not to solve the puzzle at all, but just to be frenetic and frantic. And so what I would do is I would just spin dash, shoot through any of the little guys on the floor. And if any of them happened to shoot up, that was fine. If it bounced me into the lift, that was fine, because I'd just do it again on the ceiling, do it again on the floor. And if you do that for a couple of minutes, you'll get him, because you're going to hit enough guys, you know, the little fellas, the little trundly things to take him out eventually.
And Wheelos,
But as you're doing that, you do start to get a knack for, even though that's what you're doing, even though you're just going, this is a pshoo boing, this is a pshoo boing, nevertheless, you get a certain sense of timing for that, and you are you are manipulating that to deliberately hit him with these things. And it's
a bit of a gimme. It's a bit of a gimme. It's pacing, because obviously you're not done when you beat him.
Yeah.
You've got more bosses to fight, but this is pacing it out and giving you a bit of a breather in a way, because you're not going to get one from now until the credits, basically. I think it's a good idea to have this here. I think every time I come to this boss, I'm usually quite happy, because I'm like, oh, thank God, I can stop worrying. I can stop worrying about dying for a bit, because this bat's not that hard. When you know how to do it, it's not hard. I mean, even if you don't know how to do it, it's quite hard to take damage from it, but you'll figure it out. I mean, you're going to hit him by coincidence eventually by zipping around, aren't you?
Yeah, so... I don't think this is going to be a stumper for anybody. Yeah.
No, and it puts you in a false sense of security, really. You kind of go like, oh, there we go. Like, was that the final? What am I about? What's going to happen now? And luckily what happens next is amazing.
Yeah, when you defeat it, you then walk up to what is presumably the Death Egg, the top of the Death Egg. I don't know what you would call that.
Yes, no, I've never figured out.
It seems like a landing platform.
Yeah.
Like that's sort of like the egg carrier in Sonic Adventure, you know, when you're out on that a bit, except better. And
well, what you find is that Robotnik is right there with some controls. He's been controlling this big egg. And then he
sort of like the Winged Fortress boss. It's a little bit like a little bit of a callback to that.
And then he runs away, and you're into a good old fashioned. We are running after Dr. Robotnik along this platform. What's he going to hop into? And what he hops into is big.
Well, it's the thing from Lava Reef. You then know what Lava Reef Act 1's big hand was.
Yeah,
because this thing's called the Galactic Egg Robo.
Is it
awesome?
And hang on a second. Let's make sure I'm not. They haven't changed this.
Yes.
Silver Sonic. Robotnik.
Anything that Sonic does after like 2000 is like just who cares? Like just don't regard it whatsoever. Whenever STC ended, anything after that, just like who gives a shit?
Here we go. Oh, it's called Giant Eggman Robo.
That's even better.
It's not better. Yeah. That's not as good as if it was Galactic something.
Yeah, I liked Galactic.
Eggman Robo, no.
Well, so we finally found a flaw with this game. It's not called the Galactic Egg Robo.
From this moment on, it is called the Galactic Eggman Robo, if anything. Yeah.
But, of course, what it does is it obviously deliberately calls back to the Lava Reef by slamming its hands down on the other side of this the bridge or whatever you want.
Robotnik runs into a door. The door closes behind him and it starts to rise. And it's this metal dome. And you see very quickly that, yes, it is an egg robo, but the size of the whole screen. And it comes smashing along
enormous.
With every footstep. There's a few footsteps where the screen is shaking before it even appears. And then it comes sidling in sideways.
What is it standing on?
What's it stand? Oh, no, the Death Egg. I think it's just walking around on the surface of that thing. And it's got its fingers up, and it starts to just, like, smash them down onto the platform you're on and try to squash
it. Like the Lava Reef hand.
Yep.
It's directly like, oh, so that's what that is. It's a great moment. I really like it. And what's really fun is what you've got to do is you've got to destroy all his UBs. You've got to destroy all his little fingers. Mm-hmm. So what I like to do is get in between them and then do a spin dash and do a big boing. Although you can sort of trivialise it by just doing a spin dash, and when he slams them down, he will just take damage. It doesn't hurt you at all.
I always start... I think if it's like pool or snooker. The first strike spreads the balls out. That's what you're doing here. You're doing a spin attack in the middle of his hand to just like see what happens. Just ricochet everywhere. See what fingers you take out. After that, I'm keeping the spin dash going while he tries to squash me and take
it. Dave, you just said spreads the balls
out. I know!
Balls. And, in a sense, this as well is just kind of a prelude to the real final boss, which is about to happen. But I don't have much to say about this, because I think that's its only attack. It's just slamming the fingers down, right?
I do. Oh. Because after you're done with the fingers, then you've got to deal with the nose and the mouth.
Oh, that's what I mean. That's the real, like,
boss
to me. This is when it starts to get actually difficult.
So now it becomes, like, side-scrolling, and he's chasing you from behind, destroying the platforms that you're standing on precariously over outer space.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is that, like, you know, he's got a few attacks. You bonk him on the nose, and then, like, he can fire a big laser out of his mouth, which contains the final piece of the puzzle, the Master Emerald. He needs the Master Emerald to power this one robot. And so what you do is you bonk him in the nose, and then which is just funny.
It's like a big loogie, like a big snot of fire.
Or fire coming out of his nose.
I was thinking more like a dragon, but
it's a snot.
Well, it kind of... Hang on. Let me look at the video, because I've never thought of this before, but does the big flame jet resemble his moustache in any way? Not really. Oh, well. No. Bonking his nose causes all of his clothes to fall off.
And spread his balls.
It does. The sort of the body bit falls away, as if his clothes have fallen off, to reveal the mechanism inside which is the Master Emerald and this laser.
I thought it was like his mouth was opening.
Honestly, I've never looked at it that way, but you may be right. But what I like about this is, while exposing the weak spot actually makes the boss exponentially more dangerous.
Yes.
Because he starts powering up this laser.
Oh, you the really laser that he does is amazing. We all know the sound. Warp, 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 warp.
Yeah.
And in that moment, it's like a half the screen fat laser.
Yeah.
But this is the thing about this laser, and I'm absolutely fascinated with this laser. And it reminds me of... And
it's an amazing laser.
It reminds me of the same laser that Commander Kraft uses in Mega Man 04.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
That it charges for exactly the right time and then pauses for an instant.
Yes.
And that's the instant where you know that you have to dodge.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it fires. And if you've jumped in that instant, you're fine.
Yeah.
You've got to be above it.
But you have to be perfect. It's very
difficult. And it is. I said it was a big fat laser. The fatness that it is your jump. You've got to jump and be right above it by one pixel when it goes off.
Knuckles couldn't do this.
No.
No, he couldn't.
I couldn't do this.
No, I couldn't. I'd be dead. I'd have died ages ago if I was in this game. Probably, like, honestly...
Angel Island Zone.
Like, second act of the first zone. Yeah.
I would have gotten to the first loop-de-loop and just gone, oh, fuck this.
Yeah, well, I'd have just walked around it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, okay.
But the Hydro City, I would have just drowned, and that would have been the end of all stew.
Yeah.
Found our bloated body, and they'd be like, did he actually drown, or is he just moving on?
I want you to imagine, listener, like, just smash cutting to Angel Island Zone with me in the Family Guy death pose on the ground.
Meanwhile, I've managed to find a giant ring, and I've had a breakdown. I've just got mental in there. I don't know what's going on. Like, it says get blue spheres. I'm like, I've got enough of those, mate. Spread out.
But the... For God's sake... But it's just the timing of that. Like, it's again, it feels very instinctive. It feels very, like, if this is your first time, if you're kind of panicking a bit, I feel like that is very, very good audio-visual communication.
Yeah, there is that bit. There's, like, silence right before it fires, right? So that's that's another cue to jump.
And that's kind of the point where, like, you go whoop, 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 and you know what that sound is, and then, you, like, it's, oh, Jesus, and you just, like, hit the jump button. It's
well,
like,
you've heard it before when you're fighting the laser on the flying battery. It's almost like that was teaching you what it's going to do. That's how you know, right?
It's immaculate. It's so incredibly well
designed.
Because
isn't the one on the flying battery, isn't that a repeat of like a Sonic 2 boss or a previous...
It's similar-ish, except, but the Sonic 2 boss is more just like you've got to get up to where it is to hit it.
Except here, it turns out to be like, wait a minute, what if we put this in here because now it's part of a story? It is storytelling. They're like, he's invented this laser thing that he's trying out, ready for the final boss.
But I also love just like that you can see the machinery and the pipes and the cables and stuff inside.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you can see that he's made this massive lens to focus the Master Emerald's power. Really great art.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So something I'd like to mention as well, once you've got it open, you've got time for two hits, maybe three if you're nasty.
I haven't.
And
I can do one, and that's it.
I mean, I did this on stream recently, and I had no rings left because I was an idiot, and I had so much trouble with this boss when you haven't got that safety net. But something I would like to mention is if you're playing with Sonic and Tails, this is exponentially harder because Tails will hit it, and when it's been hit, it's no longer got collision. So you will, if you hit it and Tails hits it before you hit it, you will fall straight through it.
Yeah, I've died to that before.
Which is why the first thing you should do whenever you start any Sonic game is go to the menu, find the option that says Tails alive or dead, and choose dead.
But then Tails won't be there, though.
Good.
Little Tails.
He's a stupid, stupid
listeners,
man.
Listeners, I want you to imagine a smash cutting to the Angel Island zone with Tails on the ground in the Family Guy death pose.
And me over him with a club, just battering fuck out of him. So anyway, Tails dead. And you take that down and you're like, surely this must be over. Yeah. But it's not, because Robotnik comes out and you get what I guess I would call a bit of a
breather?
No, not for me. I think this is surprisingly difficult. Mm-hmm. The Death Egg starts crumbling much more rapidly, to the point that you really have to be going. If you slow down for a second, really, you are going to die.
Yeah, you'll fall off the... Yeah.
Your wee blue legs need to be going like the clappers.
Yeah. And Robotnik is flying away. It's like the end of Final Zone in Sonic 1. That's what I always think of, you know? Except this time, it's not just one casual, leisurely hit. You've got to get a good few hits on him. But when you hit him, your momentum drops and you will slow down and you'll go like, whoa, right to the edge of oblivion.
Yeah. Even if you do it perfectly, you are still going to go slightly down the crumbling, collapsing platform into oblivion, and you're going to have to run out of it again. And the reason this is happening is because Robotnik has saved the Master Emerald. This is brilliant because it shows you desperation on screen. You can destroy his Death Egg, you can destroy his big robot, but he wants the Emerald, and the game has done everything to prove how urgent that is for him.
He is clawing onto it. Like, anybody else would have given up by this point, but he is just clawing onto victory, just like, I will take this at all costs,
because he's just in his normal little Eggmobile now. He's just poodling along.
With a little claw again, lifting the Master Emerald with a cute wee bubble around it because he's in space.
Yeah.
And like, again, the challenge in this is the momentum physics. It's the absolute pitch perfect application of these physics that this team have had 3 games to get to grips with. That every time you hit him, you almost slip off into the void because you hit him with such ferocity that you bounce backwards.
Yeah. It's more storytelling. You know, it's as you've said, it's just more and more storytelling, and
that's how you do a tense, interesting, exciting action sequence in a game. This is the thing, is so often nowadays that would be a quick time event.
Yeah.
That would be like press L and R to like balance or something like that. Yeah. It would be heavily scripted and choreographed, and it would not make me feel anything close to the same excitement as I do at the end of Sonic 3, a 2D sprite game made in 1994 with less processing power than you get on your fridge nowadays.
Yeah.
It's I mean, the thing that made me briefly sad when you said that about nowadays is it's not even really nowadays. It was within about 12 years later, you'd be doing the QTEs, you know? We fell as a species, unfortunately. But once you've defeated him, once you've finally managed to get that last hit on Robotnik, and I do think they are deliberately calling back to Final Zone there. I do think they are giving, like, saying, as if just to communicate as strong as they possibly can, you're not going to get this that easily. This is a real skin of your teeth thing, and it is absolutely a real skin of your teeth thing. If you jump for that boss too early and you're not going fast enough, you'll die.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then you'll have to fight the other two bosses again.
Not because the boss will hit you. He can't do anything to you now, but you'll fall off because you've destroyed the Death Egg and you'll go down that chasm. Yeah.
Yeah, and once you do defeat him, you can sit back and rest on your laurels because the game is now definitively, absolutely over.
The end.
And there's no more of the game. Oh, wait, there's more of the game. But not much.
If you've played it properly, there is.
This man's tenacious. You need to absolutely respect this man's, like, determination, you know?
Yeah.
He is not giving up. He's not going down. He's got another ship.
Yeah, it looks like him.
This is like Tengen Toppa Gurren Lagann. It's just like a ship inside a ship inside a ship. It's like a Matryoshka doll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Egg Matryoshka. Does that work? Not really.
Imagine cracking an egg open and just finding another egg inside. Mm. And that happens again.
It's like, that's my hell. That's my hell. A boiled egg you can never enjoy.
It's like Sisyphus, isn't it?
And then finally crack the egg open and it's not runny. And
yeah,
it's like the Twilight Zone. You know? That's the twist. But anyway, Doomsday happens. And
the Doomsday Zone.
I think this happens if you've either got all the Chaos Emeralds or all the Super Emeralds. You don't need to get all the Super Emeralds to do this. You only need the Chaos Emeralds.
Yeah, just the Chaos Emeralds are fine.
What happens now is you are supersonic and you are flying in space. You know what we didn't mention? The music for that whole boss sequence is the best music ever.
Oh my god. It's the best. It's so good.
Well, we must have already mentioned it.
When you're doing... No, we didn't. But when you're doing that final chase after Robotnik, in the background... It's this... Because
it was the Sonic 3 final boss, and that's... Like,
yeah, but now you actually get to hear it.
We probably mentioned it then, right?
We probably did, yeah. Although you don't fight that in Sonic 3 and Knuckles, so maybe not. Maybe
you
not.
No, you don't.
You don't fight the squeeze tag machine in Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
No, you don't. In Sonic 3 and Knuckles, no, you don't. No.
Well, just the little guy that goes up and down with the...
It ends after Uppies, yeah. Unless you're Knuckles, I think you might fight it as Knuckles.
You do fight it as Knuckles.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter.
That's not important.
No, sorry.
But no, we had to just at least acknowledge the boss being amazing.
Okay, but
amazing.
No, but it does. But it is important because it means that they've gone, we're saving this music till the end of the game. Because it's one of the best boss musics anyone's ever written.
It's brilliant.
I assume it would be in an interlude, but seriously, like, go and listen to that. It's such amazing music. But what you get is a transition from that when, like, you finally chasing off Robotnik, you hit him enough times, he disappears off the edge of the screen, it cuts to black, and you think, is it over? Is it over? Have we done it? Have we finally done it?
And then,
Doomsday Zone. Yeah. And it's like, okay, this is it. This is the doomsday. This is the end. And again, it's like a marathon. It's like, at the end, it's just a constantly escalating because Robotnik will just not give up.
He will not stop. He won't give up. He's constantly exciting. Frantic. And the music is amazing. I remember, when you hear the Doomsday Zone music, for the rest of your life, you're like, it's a twofer. The two end boss tunes are equally good.
And so at this point, the Death Egg has gone.
Yeah.
The giant egg robo, Robotnik's giant egg man robo man machine.
We ought to say is also itself a callback to the Sonic 2 big robot boss that he was in.
Oh, yeah, the
that.
Death Egg robot. Mm.
Yeah.
These names are rubbish. It's like Galactic Egg Robo, come on, man. You know, like, it's gone. Everything has gone. Sky Sanctuary has gone. You've not been on the island for a while now. You don't even have a platform to stand on. And just the last Hail Mary as Robotnik is getting away in a yet another machine with the Master Emerald is you turn into supersonic and you start flying through an asteroid belt after him.
Smashing through the asteroids. You don't even have to dodge those asteroids. You can smash through them.
Sonic
and
does
destroy
not fly.
Them.
This is the Sonic. Super Sonic has not been able to fly before this. This is just like Super Saiyan. This is like Super Saiyan SG, whatever. I don't know what you would call it.
Sorry, I've just remembered that I really love this series. I've just remembered how exciting that was.
Yeah,
it's easy to forget when you look at, like, for example, everything made after Sonic Adventure and, like, everyone who likes it, and you go, I mean, look at me, for God's sake. I like it. I'm like that. Jesus.
Like, I mean, I like it, and I look like this.
Yeah, you look hench. Keep working on those guns.
Shay is so annoying ever since he started going to the gym, honestly.
Oh,
like, because
so
it worked.
Annoying.
It worked immediately.
The only... Yeah, this is the thing. It's the only thing that's given me that much of a buzz. It's like, it's dead 50 on the, dude on the bench press. It's going to the Iron Church. But, I know, Sonic is a laughing stock, and I'm not saying that that is not deserved. And I understand that that's going to get people on Twitter coming after me, but here's the thing, you guys have been really, really nasty to me, so I don't care what you think. And this is the thing, it has been a laughing stock for so long, but I need you to understand that at a certain point, Sonic Team were one of the most respected developers in the industry because they just kept putting out this kind of stuff.
And taking the credit of the Sega Technical Institute's work.
Of course, I had to throw that in there. You know, like, they were respected. You know, this series was respected.
Sonic 3 and Knuckles, it's not like what it is now, which is this kind of like, big Sonic fans and old Sonic fans bang on about, like, but this was good ones. When this came out, it was the hottest ticket on the Mega Drive. Like, everybody wanted this. It was good.
Mm-hmm. And, like, this is the thing. It's like, if you want to know why we are not normal about this game this series, it's because it has given us, the Raiders of the Lost Ark of video games.
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of constantly escalating, exciting set pieces.
And this is the climax, of course, of the game, is that it throws you into a situation that's not familiar, which is supersonic flying, but you immediately, you get it, you press the arrows, you're like, oh, I'm flying now.
It's got a keypad and one button. You instantly get it. And if you've got to this point, you've unlocked supersonic, you know how the ring system works.
Exactly. Yes. It doesn't need to tell you that you're racing against time, because you know you're racing against time, because you're in space, and if you run out of rings and turn back to normal Sonic, you're like, I don't think normal Sonic can fly.
Yes, that's the other thing. In the in future games, even in the Sonic Adventure, Sonic Adventure 2, when you're supersonic in those games, and in one of those you're in space, you know, because there's a comparison, the whole game changes completely. Whereas in this case, you're like, oh, so I'm this, and I rings, and they're going down, and I can't let them go down, or I'll turn blue and die. All right, here we go. And you start playing it. And the only surprise is that you do think to yourself, well, what if I hit this jump button? It just happens automatically. Your finger is used to hitting the jump button. And you find that what happens is you kind of like bit forwards a bit, don't you? Sort of. Is that just hypersonic? Because I always play this as
having
like,
said that, literally that sound every single time. It's like,
having said that, I believe the first time I did this, I didn't know that, and I was really struggling with it because I was just like surviving and like, how the hell do I progress?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But then, now, once I did obviously know that, I can do it in like 30 seconds now. But let's talk about what actually happens, which is that you're flying through this asteroid belt. You have 50 rings, I think, initially, by default. More rings are flying past you in clusters of either 3 or 6. I'm not sure if they're random. They feel random.
No, I don't think they're random.
And there are huge asteroids that when you hit them, well, to be honest, they barely slow you down. It's communicating how powerful you are at this point. You're just going straight through.
It's just pure game feel.
And initially, you are just making your way through them. You are pursuing Robotnik, but it's just a period of adjustment, of getting used to it. Let you collect rings more or less at your own pace. Then once you get through that, you reach sort of the mid-boss of this stage, which is this enormous armor, like this big square shield almost, that is then firing homing missiles at you, which by accident, probably, you will figure out you need to lure them to hit the head of this robot, which is exposed.
Yeah.
Because it's essentially wearing a big metal cloak, so you can't hit it. And
it's a sort of like one man vessel that he's flying along, but the man is.
I believe one of them big robot. This section doesn't have more rings, so you have to reach this with a decent number, or at least be confident enough to. I could be wrong about that, but
no, I think you're right, and I'm kind of looking at a video out of the corner of my eye. I think you're right, but also this is the first time I've noticed that because I think I always have got enough rings for this bit.
Yeah.
It's the thing is us describing it, I think, makes it sound like it's very overwhelming and intimidating, but I think this part is very, very well pitched to create as much tension as possible, to give you that last burst of adrenaline and excitement to go out on. But because the Doomsday, I don't think, is particularly difficult.
No. You might die once or twice.
Absolutely.
I mean,
just
getting used to it out.
Controls, but but once you reach that mid-boss, because the first section of memory serves, I think, is just asteroids, maybe a few missiles. The missiles will knock you backwards.
You don't know you're chasing Robotnik at first. You're just going through space, and then missiles start coming.
You see him fly past you, don't you?
I don't think you do. I'm not sure you do. Do you?
Oh, you might be right. You might be right about that. I thought that the first thing you saw was him flying up from the corner, but I could be wrong.
Possibly, but what you definitely see
imagined
is...
it in the old mind's eye there.
You've got a very advanced brain to be able to do that. But as you're going, you start to see these pairs of missiles coming towards you. So you know there's something firing at you up ahead. And you just progress. You just go on ahead and find him there. Mm. And it is. It's not overwhelming. There's just enough on the screen for you always to be able to dodge it. It looks like it's going to be a bullet hell R-type sort of a game. Mm. And it's...
Except you're the bullet.
You're invincible. You're hypersonic now. They're not going to do anything to you with those.
I do love the... I know we've mentioned it already, but I want to flag it up again because I just really love it. I love the fact that it teaches you the stakes entirely organically.
Yeah.
Because you already know what happens when you run out of rings.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant. Like, that's just... maybe I'm overselling it, but I really do love that.
No, it's absolutely brilliant.
But once you've made your way through that initial gauntlet, and it's sort of the that not hand-holding, but it's that sort of, this is what this is. Mm. Because that initial gauntlet sort of crops up again in the third, in the final pit, except then there's much more tension, because you probably don't have many rings left at that point. I usually don't. But once you defeat the... missile thing, which is done, but more or less is firing bullets at you as well. And if they hit you, they will send you spiraling backwards and lose control for a second, which is not good when you're ticking. So you guide these.
They're homing missiles, and you see them going towards you.
They're homing on you, and you. I guess you kind of realize I've got to get these somewhere, and you figure out eventually it's the head of this thing.
He's got a shrunk down version of the same face that the big boss had a minute ago.
I have this weird idea that he hits himself on purpose once to get to alert you to that, but I could be wrong about that.
That would be silly of him.
It would be silly of him, but it's robotic. He fights you with a robot where it's made out of wall jump material so that you can hurt it. He's an idiot. Have you seen the egg gamble thing in Shadow of the Hedgehog? He's a moron. Anyway, egg dealer, that's it. We make our way past that, and you shatter this armor. It comes off, and then you've got the flying Death Egg robot.
Yeah.
With the Master Emerald in its claws.
Yeah.
Buggering off at max speed.
He's kind of shrunk down now. He's either further away or smaller.
But now you're going after
him. You can see all of him. He's gripping the Master Emerald, and he's like, right, I'm off! Gambit!
These Death Egg robots are small. These are far away. and you zip after him, and at this point, you are chasing him, and if you mash the button, that's how you catch up with
him. That's the only way you catch up with him. Otherwise, it's just an endless
level. If you mash the button, it's harder to control you, because you are zipping even faster over the screen while he is launching these kind of plumes of grenades at you that will knock you back. And at this point, you're also maybe low on rings, so there's a bit of a risk-reward thing of, like, do I hang back, play it safe, and get more rings, and then push the offensive?
That's it.
Or do I just go for it? Now, when I play it now, I usually just go for it, and you can kill him in a few seconds. But this is the end of the game. This is the final challenge, is that weaving through asteroids, missiles, plumes of grenades, and your own mortality impending. Yeah. Your impending mortality.
And the most frantic music possible. It's great.
It's
great. A bit more frantic than it sounds like coming out of Stuart, but yes.
Yeah, when I did it, it sounds like the Coronation Street theme, doesn't it? And,
this is just the podcast now.
That was Thames TV. Anyway, you zip through there, and that's the finale. You hit it enough times, Death Egg Robot bursts into flames and falls off the screen, flash to white, I think.
Nearly. As he falls off the screen, he drops the Master Emerald, and you, Super or Hypersonic, blast forward and grab it.
And you grab it, yes. That's right, yeah. And then it's... flashed away, I think, and still no none of that.
No,
because we're not playing the game anymore. We're out of the game, and this is all real. you die in this, you actually die in real life, and you
Sonic bursts out of the television and just shakes your hand personally.
Bursts out the television, grabs your kids, bursts back in, never see him again.
Well, it does fade to white, but it very quickly fades back in again on the atmosphere of the planet.
You're thinking of the other guy, Stu. That's Knuckles the Kidnapper.
I think that was actually Michael Jackson, the music contributor.
And you're watching now Super or Hypersonic falling with the Master Emerald through the atmosphere of the planet. And you see layers of it and clouds pass you by as you transition.
And the Sky Sanctuary theme is playing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this kind of like... And again, maybe too flowery, but it's like, you know, it's kind of given that very uplifting feeling because it's an uplifting song.
Yeah.
But it's like this wrong has been righted. Like, you know, the like Knuckles' people, like everything's restored and put right.
Yeah.
And I believe after some time, Tails flies by in the biplane. Yes. He had it the whole time. What the hell?
Yeah.
You land on it and it shoots out a little magnet or a grabber or something and grabs the emerald to tail it behind you. And then you've got your little birdies, the flickies or whatever.
It's actually remarkable. I'm looking at it now and I've never thought of this before. Not like the thing I was just talking about where you see starting from space, the outer atmosphere of the planet, going down through a deep blue as clouds pass you by. Then Tails comes and catches you and you continue to descend and you go all the way until you are now at the sea level with more clouds going along in the background of that. And as you fly along, the island comes into view. It's like it's like one of those impressive, you know, this was all one single shot in a film or something, but on the Mega Drive.
It's Orson Welles
it's
shit,
yeah. It's remarkable what they've done.
Orson Welles played this for inspiration.
Did.
That he did, yeah. I'm actually a bit lost for words now because we finished it and I just feel so bereft. because the ending is they fly out, like that happens. You get the floating island is centered in the middle of the screen, right? In the water. You then appear in the background, I think.
Well, you fly. The Tails' plane flies all the way back there and they basically must put the Master Emerald down because it starts to raise out.
They put it down in like Angel Island.
Yeah, yeah, it starts to rise out of the sea, and then you do. You
the
cut
water
to.
Cascading off it instantly.
That's right.
It's gorgeous sprite work. Yeah,
it's amazing. And then you cut. Yeah, like it's a big sprite that takes up most of the screen. But they animate this thing, and you can see little details. You can see like the little buildings
where
and things all over
and
it
and stuff. Yeah,
you can see a pyramid, all of that.
Which,
and then yeah,
which feels so goddamn long ago now, doesn't it?
Yes.
That you're on Angel Island.
And like, I mean, I'm sorry, but like once again. Do you get why we're not normal about this? Because like when we were children, what we were exposed to was this great big exciting adventure that had like these little cartoon animals, super exciting, high octane, high speed gameplay, but it's also about a magical floating island being like occupied by a mad scientist who had created a space station and needs this super magic artifact to power it.
Yeah.
Without a single line of dialogue.
To a child, like that's catnip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Sonic 1 and 2 were like, you know, here's some game mechanics. Do you like them? Okay, that's Sonic 1. Sonic 2, okay, how about we refine that?
No,
arguably
make
it worse. But yeah. But nevertheless, how about we focus that onto a kind of play? You're going to be running through it. You're going to have a tremendous time. And it's mostly, Sonic 2 is mostly about iconography. It's about the colours and the way it looks.
I mean, we've done a whole episode about Sonic 2, but Sonic 2 is what if Sonic 1 but too much?
Like, yeah. And then basically. Sonic 3 goes, right, what about everything we've learned? What if we just present the ultimate game with that?
Yeah, what if we just made the best game ever made?
What if we made the best game using that?
Yeah.
And it's like this incredible finale. And so what happens next in the ending is the perfect final scene, which is that you cut to Angel Island, and Sonic and Tails on their plane, small, are going by in the background. There's the Master Emerald, where they've put it. And Knuckles just kind of comes out and watches them go. And it is beautiful.
He's smiling, isn't he? He's got a little smile as well.
Little smile on his face.
Grinny knuckles. And he's got this he's got this stance, which is to say, like, almost respect. You know, it's very good. And that little glimpse of the Angel Island tiles again as well to remind you that you've done everything. You've been everywhere. That's where you started. You've come full circle. The Angel Island is not on fire anymore. It's back to normal. It's back to how it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then meow, 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 meow,
meow, meow, meow, meow, meow. It's big and joyous.
That should be the whole podcast from now. The rest of it should just be us doing the music.
Okay.
Then you get the medley of all of the amazing music that you've heard, not one single shit track in the whole thing, all bangers, wall to wall.
No, sadly, it's not all the music you heard. There's a longer version out there from a prototype edition, but I think it's just Sonic and Knuckles tracks, isn't it?
I guess because by that time Michael Jackson was in the old doghouse for the old
which
nonsense.
Which is a shame because I think the Sonic 3 credits theme is beautiful. I think
it is
a gorgeous composition. It's the one that like was later like you know, it sounds very similar, shall we say, to Stranger in Moscow.
Yeah. I think what it is that Brad Buxer had that chord sequence and just went, oh, let's make something new out of this. It's not the same, but it's
it is excellent.
Sort of how it, yeah, and it's interesting. Listen, it's a fairly universal thing you can say, isn't it? Like, it's a shame about the bad things Michael Jackson did. I liked a lot of his music. That's just a fairly mainstream opinion, but it extends to Sonic the Hedgehog fans.
I was a huge fan. I love loads of his music. I listen to it all the time.
Mm. Me too, but only on headphones.
Bad lad. Oh, bad lad. Smack hand. You know, not good.
No, you can't. There's some of the best pop songs ever recorded. You can't just admit that they were good. Yeah. But and the same with Sonic 3, like his music on Sonic 3 was good, or the team.
Air quotes, his music on Sonic 3, which we later found out was not the original music, which was mind-blowing. Mind-melting. Did we mention that already? I bet we did.
We did, yes, we already mentioned that.
That's still one of my all-time most mind-blowing things that's ever happened. Like, even seriously, including like amazing actual life events. I slightly rank that above a few of my most major life.
The birth of my first child.
Loss of virginity is there. finding out that the Sonic 3 music was originally the music used in the PC version is there.
Yeah.
Give me time, that might change. But for now, no. Anyway, yes, amazing game, wall to wall. We've talked about it for now, probably like 1,000 hours. I would say probably, except I'd about to say more hours than anyone's talked about any game on Retronauts ever, but that honestly probably isn't true. They've probably talked about some rubbish Final Fantasy or something.
Yeah, or something like that. Or Mega Man or something.
Nerds. Yeah. Castlevania.
Hey, in the credits, it's really nice of them that they credit who their enemy artist is. So, you know, they're not even just crediting the artists they like and good stuff. Enemy artist Satoshi Yokogawa gets a shout-out as well. That's nice of them, isn't it?
I mean, while he is a villain, he deserves credit for his work.
Yeah, so. And I suppose you could say that it's them rubbing it in his face. Like, look, we made this, enemy
what
artist.
What have you made? Nothing.
Satoshi Yokogawa, yeah.
And, yeah, this was the last good game ever made, unfortunately.
Sadly,
and
yes.
It's just wall-to-wall shit from here on out. But having now done this, I mean, do we have anything else to say about this game now that it's over? We haven't talked about the two-player level. Should we give those the old boy swerve?
If you like.
Yeah, there's a two-player mode. You play against two players. It's fine.
Music's great again.
You play it a couple of times and never again, but the music's really nice. So you listen to it. You add that to your soundtrack.
You know, you'd rather play Bomberman or Dashing Desperado.
Wiz and Liz.
Wiz and Liz.
The best two-player game on the Mega Drive.
Dash and Desperados exists.
Wiz on Liz?
Yes, Wiz on Liz.
I need to play that.
You drew that in geography class, didn't you, Dave?
Too busy drawing Zulmix.
Call back there. Yeah. Zulback.
Hey! Zul with two backs.
I meant words. Let's give...
Literary illusion there.
Yeah, it was very good. That's what people tune in for, is that kind of clever material and literacy.
Yeah. Shakespearean filth,
Well, we have rinsed this,
yes.
I would say, as we have rinsed it, no doubt, many times by playing it in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to be slightly introspective now, if that's okay, because I'm normally ever so gregarious. The reason I did this is, I called this... this triad, Order of the Triad. if we were the Order of the Triad, I'm the Alchemist, I think. David is probably Orpheus, and that leaves you as well. It's not going to work, is it? Let's just leave the whole thing.
I'm not comfortable with this on any level.
Yeah, forget it. Just cut the whole thing. Doesn't matter. You can be the Outrider. There you go. Problem solved. And pretty sweet. Anyway, I wanted to do this because. Rightly or wrongly, I had this perception that a lot of the Retronauts gang aren't particularly Sonic fans. Fair enough. You don't have to be a Sonic fan. It's fair enough.
No.
But
well, I think we've established that there's a very good case to be made that you shouldn't be a Sonic fan.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is against the rules to be a Sonic fan, but like, I'm a Sonic fan, and for my sins. And what I wanted, I suppose, was to create something that was... It wasn't just, oh, it's really good, mate. I wanted to get into the weeds, and I wanted to really get the enthusiasm across, and I feel like we did that, so well done, everyone. Well done,
yeah,
everyone.
Yeah. Good job, Joel.
If you've listened to this whole thing and you come away from it going, I wonder what they thought of that game, then you've made a mistake, and you must listen to it again.
There's some subtle clues scattered throughout.
Taken together, what I like is just the idea of having... Other than the occasional ribald jokes and tangents, a fairly solid block of real appreciation and criticism, you know, of a game that sometimes seems to get written off from the best ofs. Because, I mean, this pisses on Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
And Mario World, for me.
Like, to use another literary allusion, like, this is my white whale, I think.
Yeah.
Because I have to be blunt with you.
I'm the white whale.
I have fallen very much out of love with Sonic over the last few years. Yeah. Just a lot of stuff, like I found myself constantly alienated from the community. I found myself like it'll probably be back up by the time this goes up, but like I took down Sonic Spitball, which was like my first real successful video series on YouTube.
One of the reasons I wanted you to do this.
Best,
you know,
Sonic videos on YouTube.
Because I knew you
internet.
Could talk about Sonic. Well,
Like, I took it down because it was just like nastiness for comments. That, like, I made these comments literally a decade ago. These people are like boxing my after image. And it's like, and the thing is many of them are coming in and disagreeing with it, which I'm brilliant. Please, genuinely, I'm being so sincere about this. Please, take this conversation away from me. Go further with it. Tell me why you disagree. Absolutely. I love that. But it's just, they're not doing that. They're just calling me an idiot. Mm. You know, they're calling me ignorant. They're calling me an idiot. And it's like, okay, I don't...
You could not have made the case any more clearly that you are not an ignorant idiot Sonic the Hedgehog.
I've been in the weeds. I've been in this whole Sonic thing for way too long. Since I was... I don't know how long I've been in it. It's been forever. I mean, Sonic was the first game that I can remember playing. So I've been a fan since I was, like, what, 4? And I've sort of watched in real time this community that I was very fond of. And I'm not saying it's all of the community, and I'm not saying these people, it's all of them, because I have, you know, it's not, it's obviously not. But I've watched the face of it turn very ugly. You know, and you'd think I'd fit in more that way, but no, actually.
Like, you leave Sonic fans alone without a trailer for a month or so, and they just cannibalize themselves. Like, it's... Like
sadly.
I'm not sitting here going, oh, someone was mean to me on Twitter, so I don't like Sonic anymore. It's just genuinely like I'm not that interested in the games anymore. I still haven't played Superstars or Frontiers or anything like that because they're just I haven't seen the second movie or the third one.
Yeah.
Because it's not out yet.
It'll be out by the time this goes.
Yeah, at time of recording, it's not out yet.
Fourth one will probably be out by the time this goes up.
I didn't watch, so it's not bringing me very much joy, and the community just being that caustic has just made me go, right, well, I don't need to be part of this.
Twitter, innit, I guess.
Absolutely.
Giving them a twister, innit. I mean, I don't want to end this on a negative sort of note. No, I don't mean that, oh, don't do that shit, I don't mean it like that, I just mean, like, that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this, is to have something that was just, you know, it was suggested after episode one, there was a sort of criticism, which I'm open to it, but it was like, you should have someone who doesn't like it. No, that's not the point of this.
No.
There's always someone who doesn't like it.
If you want somebody who doesn't like Sonic, you have got so much else to do.
Look out the window, you'll see about 4 of them.
And if you find someone who doesn't like Sonic 3 and Knuckles, you've found someone who hasn't... like given it enough of their attention to be on the podcast, frankly.
Well, this is like, so all of that was to establish that I think there is a very strong case to be, like, you know, I think if you're not a Sonic fan, absolutely, because let's be fair, it's been more duds than misses. It's been more duds than hits. It's been more chumps than plumps.
Well, it's been more duds than misses, because a dud is worse than a miss. A miss is all right.
But on the other hand, like, the thing, the white whale, the thing that frustrates me is that there is a narrative, and I'm assuming it's from people who didn't grow up with the games and who are used to a very different style of platformer, which is fair enough, but it's from people who aren't really giving these games a chance. They're like playing through it once, or they're losing all their lives once because they're trying to play it like Mario.
Or they lose their rings once and immediately get angry. And
like, absolutely, the ring system is so forgiving and just dismissing it, you know? And that really frustrates me, because I think we have demonstrated that there is, at the very least, even if you don't agree with absolutely everything we have to say, fair enough, absolutely, again, please take the conversation away from us.
Mm-hmm.
But and yourself. I think we have demonstrated that there is a lot to appreciate here. There's a lot of really fantastic game design and narrative design as well.
Yeah.
Like, the idea to me that there was absolutely never any reason to get excited about this series at all at any point is absurd. It is it is like saying, to use a pertinent example, oh, it's like saying that Thriller didn't really leave much of a splash, you know, or going and saying that, like, grass is pink.
Knuckles is pink. I've got a bit of a hobby horse jippism that I keep bringing up when it relates to this, which I'll mention now. I've probably done it on Retronauts before. I used to be quite loath to mention it, because I think it used to sound insane. And as time has gone on, I think it's been proven so right that it is completely sane thing to say. Which is, like, we are in a post-truth era of gaming, especially gaming history, because any old wank can go on YouTube, no offense, Shay, and say anything, and they people will believe it.
Well,
and it's like when I would write for Nintendo Life, and I wrote that thing about Sonic that was full of what I believed were majority opinions, and then got it in the neck, and it was the dredging realization of both a people who weren't there for this are telling me what happened at the time, and they're wrong, and I know they're wrong. And B, holy Christ, in this fandom, I'm old as shit. I'm, like, ancient. I'm, like, friggin' Steve Jackson. Like, oh my God, am I old in this fandom? My word. Nobody wants to hear from me.
Well, someone explained to me why it is that the internet has just decided that this game is not good. And it's because in the console wars, when that was going on, which is, that's all it is, there was just a marketing gimmick between two companies. And some kids came down on one or another side of it. And as it happens, and I loved both, but there were kids who were into Sega, there were kids who were into Nintendo. Now, Sega was aimed at the, like, cool leather British jacket kind of crowd, or kids that were, or kids who wanted to identify.
Yeah, they had a counterculture image. Yeah.
Yes, and Nintendo was not the counterculture at all. That was the mainstream thing, and that was for softer kids. And those are the kids who built the first foundations of internet culture at the end of the 90s. And we just still have their stone tablets that we still read from now.
Also, it is also worth noting as well that we're all British. Sorry about that, listeners. And
not sorry.
I'm not.
Sega. Okay, you're not. Sorry. Well, two of us are British. And you're something. God knows what.
No, I'm not. Sorry. I am British.
Oh, okay.
What you need to remember is that I know I speak funny. I know that I speak funny, but remember that Scotland is just England's hat.
He's talking funny talk. No.
He say an R and then he say another R very quickly afterwards.
Honestly, mate, I'm really sorry, but that is really funny, though. Like, it's hilarious. I sometimes wake up laughing because I think about that. Anyway, being British, Sega won for that generation over
there. Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to go with the narrative that nobody had a Nintendo, because they did. I knew several people with Nintendos, Sega won. Sega owned that generation, and there's a reason why these things live large over here so much, you know, and quite a lot of major Sonic content is British. And I wonder if, I mean, there's also that factor, is the fact that gaming history is where is generally dominated by American perspectives because it's enormous. America.
Oh, the crash of 83. Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that didn't happen.
Exclusively an American phenomenon.
Didn't happen at the Year Awards right there. And, yeah, of course, for us, it was, you know, the era when gaming was thriving. Yes. And it came to prominence in UK during the crash.
The height of the UK gaming, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, which we'll get to in a Spectrum episode at some point,
hey!
I imagine. And, hey, foreshadowing. But is it foreshadowing if you just say you're going to do it? I don't think it is.
I don't know.
But we need to wrap this up. So
a retro Spectrum.
A retro Spectrum, very nice. Oh. Yeah, and a chocolate Sinclair's crap means nothing. So it's a game that very clearly means a lot to us and lives wild and free in our heart of hearts. And yeah. Hopefully you've listened to this and you've gone, oh, this is a very sincere thing. Like, this is not
absolutely,
us trying
yeah.
to, this is not us trying to be contrarian or trying to convince you of anything. It's just us telling each other why we love this.
Yeah, what we're speaking is not just the truth or not just our truth. It's like, it's there's a feeling of incredulity that anyone doesn't already know or believe it, and we're constantly
extent,
up
yes.
against waves of people who for some reason just don't know one of the main things about gaming history. Because
they don't
care because there was a cartoon on the telly about something else. And that seems to, there was a breakfast cereal or something else. And that seems to be all they care about.
Like, because this, we all get so wrapped up in the internet discourse and, oh, why is he saying this? And why is he saying this? And who's saying, like, what's he responding to there? And like, and all of it. But like, I think that's it. I think that is the beating heart of this whole ridiculous endeavor is that we, the three of us, truly love this game and we truly mm-hmm. have meant everything that we have said.
Yep.
And it has been a true joy just getting to go through it with these guys and discover so much more to love about one of my favorite games.
There have been revelations through this, things I've never even thought about. Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm still thinking about Sandopolis.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Thank you for listening. If you've listened to all of this, or even just a bit of it, I'm really grateful. Thank you for giving it the time. I want to thank everyone for the reception this has had, because this is the more than any other thing I get people saying to me, like, when's the next one coming? When's the next one coming? And I'm glad they've been spaced out, in a sense. But I do want to do more sort of deep dives like this, but in all honesty, this is the only game that I feel I could do that for. So
yeah, we can't go into this amount of detail and anything else.
But, yeah, Sonic's a series that I do love. It's a series I recognise an enormous number of faults in. I think quite a lot of the games are just genuinely shit. Sonic 3 & Knuckles, though, is not for a Sonic game, not for a Mega Drive game, not for a console game, for all games, is in the top 10, if not the top 5, mm-hmm. if not the top 3. Mm-hmm. And I think that now that you've listened to us say why for 17 hours... God, I hope you get it, like in that song.
Like, even if you don't agree, I hope you understand, like, where we're coming from.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, I hope you understand. Thank you for trying to understand, and I think that's it. I think we're done.
I think that's it.
I'm still a bit breath now. Yeah, thank Christ.
Thank goodness we don't have to be friends anymore.
I've hated every second of this. It was an ordeal. I've loved it, and I think anyone listening to me going on will know that I loved it. So thank you very much, Dave, Shay, for doing it.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you for hosting
the fun. Hopefully I'll have you back for more things. And,
I'd love to. Oh, and thank you very much to Retronauts as well for like allowing me to come
on. Those guys. Thanks, Retronauts, for allowing this to happen.
Thanks, Retronauts, for when I said I want to do 20 hours about Sonic 3 & Knuckles, not firing me instantly. Out of a cannon.
We all know it's because none of us knew how long this was going to be when you pitched it.
We had no idea. That's my favourite thing about it, the organic realisation that we've only done two zones, or one zone, and we're in 2 hours. That's why I knew it was going to be gold standard.
Yeah.
You know, I hope people listen to this in the future, and they go, this is a seminal work of Sonic 3 & Knuckles criticism, because they bloody well ought to. There's nothing that anyone has done that's been better. Suck it. Thank you. I've been Stuart Jip. Dave, they already know, but where can people find you on the internet?
Sonic the Comic the Podcast. If you've liked listening to us go on about Sonic the Hedgehog, both of these guys are on Sonic the Comic the Podcast. You know, one
episode. On it again, you shit.
Yeah, you should. No, come back on again. I'm always on it. A friend, Chris McFeely from Transformers the Basics on YouTube, is always on it. What, Shay?
I would love to. Can we? Like,
yeah, come.
Get us both on it at the same time.
Get us both on at once.
Come and
on.
Just ruin it.
Yeah. and you should go and listen
about
to
all
it.
All kinds of sex acts.
Sonic the Comic the Podcast. When this game came out, and America was fiddling about in Knothole and doing Free and Princess Sally and all of that. Yeah, exactly. Our comic, we had a totally separate comic in the UK that followed this stuff. There is an adaptation of Sonic 3 and Knuckles. We find, and you can listen to us go through the whole series, find out things people never knew. Did you know we noticed the tapestry? The tapestry from the Sonic and Knuckles fight, it's in Sonic the comic. They just covered it up with a speech balloon.
Mm-hmm. Whoops.
Yep, whoops.
Nice going, Debbie.
Whoops-o. Anyway, yeah, come and listen to that. You'll find out loads about this sort of Sonic, and there's just loads of joy for it. If you liked this, you'll like that. STCTP.zone. It also, if you're interested in this, I've got another podcast called Serious Disney, and it's about Disney
good.
Stuff.
It's really good.
It is good.
I was quite moved by it once, because who's the other guy again? I keep forgetting.
Jahan Ranasinghe.
He said something that was so insightful, I actually got emotional. I asked how clever it was.
That's going to happen. That constantly on yeah. Serious Disney. Go and listen to those podcasts. They are good. And you'll find me on other stuff. Just search my name. I'm a guest on stuff quite a bit sometimes.
Mm. You've ruined many podcasts that
yeah.
I've listened to.
Demon Tomato Dave.
Oh, God, no, not this guy again.
YouTube as well. Demon Tomato Dave, YouTube. Look for Demon Tomato Dave, Dave's First Game, and Demon Tomato Dave, Learning to Settle. Those are two good games about, good videos about retro games I've made. That's me, Shay.
You can find me
hey,
online.
Hey, I'm the one who cues in the show.
All right.
You're not the host.
Okay.
Down.
Right, that's me then. Now introduce Shay, please do.
Shay.
Yes. you can find me online at...
Shake him away, toys.
Most... that was a good one. I think my favourite one that you've ever come up with was 50 Grades of Shay. But you can find me online on Twitter and YouTube and everything. Just type in Shugles. That is spelled how it sounds. And
like Google with a sh.
Exactly. Exactly. Shugles, or maybe Shugles _, depending on the availability of names on most social media, especially YouTube. That is where I do incredibly long deep dives into video games.
They're really good.
I have got
really
one.
Good.
It's 11 hours on Pokemon Brilliant Diamond. It sounds like a joke. I'm very, very happy with
you
it.
Know,
I put a lot of work into it.
When you've been online and you've seen those articles that are like, Debased Lunatic makes 11-hour Pokemon video, he's the Debased Lunatic. Yeah.
It's me. I try and make sure it's not just... like I know these things have a bad reputation. If you need something to sleep to, I think it's good. But
it shouldn't have bad reputations, though. People should just learn that you can pause and resume.
Yeah.
Well, they have a bad reputation for just being overlong plot summaries, but I've done my best to ensure that that's not what this is.
They're not.
I am not a passionate watcher of very long YouTube videos, and it is because it means I never have to worry about what will distract me when I'm on the toilet. I know there's the next few minutes of whatever the long video I'm watching is.
On the toilet? Yeah. On the toilet? What is that?
On the toilet. Well, it's a special installation I have in my house, and I will show it to you one day. You can come around here.
Oh,
and
I can't.
Show
I'm
you.
Really excited to see
You're
it.
You're going to love this.
Wow.
But I've also done an hour-long video on Zelda 1, which I'm very proud of.
Oh, that's dead good. Yes.
Mm. Can I recommend the Crash video? That's probably one of my favourites.
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm really happy with that Crash video as well. Yeah. I think that is...
I watched it again the other day, and it was good. It was still good. I was like, oh, this isn't become shit. It's still good. It's
now, tell me if you had to take this one down as well, but... the introduction to classic Sonic gameplay and how it works and how not to be all American about it.
That's very pertinent. Yes, if you'd like to try Sonic the Hedgehog 3 at the end of all this, and you're having a bit of trouble, then there's a video I've got called A Beginner's Guide to Classic Sonic that will kind of take you through it and how I think when I play. It's only 10 minutes. I hope I've gotten a lot of very positive feedback on it, so I think it is a useful resource.
It's really good. It's really good. It will stop you from thinking that the way to play classic Sonic is to hold right and also not enjoying that. you'll know what to really do.
So now you know where to find these fine folks. You can find out how to give us loads and loads of your money. So if you go to patreon.com/retronauts, if you haven't already, you can subscribe for a mere $5 a month, at which point you will receive Diamond Fights this week in retro columns, which are also recorded as podcasts, and they're very, very good. You will receive a bonus episode every week, a brand new episode for you, or is it two bonus episodes every month? I've forgotten, and I've done this 10,000 times. It's one of those, it's very good. And you can also listen to the weekly episodes early as well, a week early. So to quote Richard Herring, you'll be the coolest kids on the playground. I don't think kids listen to the show, and I really, really hope they don't, because we say fuck a lot and talk about... But, you know...
It was one time, I'm really sorry.
I've done it loads of times.
Oh, okay.
Moving on.
Good company, then.
Yes, lots of good things on the Patreon. By the time this goes up, I'll probably have started my Patreon thing, which I'm not going to say what it is, because it might not have started yet, because I'm being a bit crappy.
Whatever it is, I bet it'll be a banger!
Now to end the podcast, which I'm really bad at. Have a supersonic tacular day. There you go. How about that? Oh, no. Sonic 3 and... Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was not very good, was it? Yeah, seriously, though, this has been good. I've had fun doing this. Thanks very much for listening. I'm going to print the entire transcript and turn it into the world's most tedious book. Thanks very much again. It really does mean a lot. It's been interesting. It's been funny. And you know what? I'm going to say it. I've been a bit emotional at points because of things that this has brought up. So, yeah, cheers for that. Let's hope there's another Sonic game that's as good as this again. There won't be, but let's hope anyway. It's like the people who went to see Alien Romulus. They're like, well, this is the 12th shit one in a row. Maybe this one will be good, though, because that's what it's like to be a Sonic fan.
Sonic game. There's never been and will never be and anything as good as Sonic 3 and Knuckles. And no, that feeling of being, like, in my case, 14 and just obsessively playing it, or 13 or whatever it was, it's just one of the happiest times I've ever had.
You ever have that ice lolly that was called Mr. Long, and it was, like, really long?
Remember that? Long, man.
Do you remember Mr. Long? Do you remember Mr. Long?
I know
that
what you
was
mean.
Almost as, I would say that was, like, maybe two-thirds of the way towards being as good as Sonic 3 and Knuckles, and that was amazing.
I'm a Boomy man. Did you ever have a Boomy?
I had one before the show.
Three fruit made out of sculpted sorbet on a stick, a strawberry, a lemon, and orange. Oh, wow, amazing. God,
yeah, that sounds really good. Yeah. But you cannot beat a classic 99.
I was eating a Boomy while I was playing Sonic 3 and Knuckles. I think the times overlapped. Maybe
you can.
Was good.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah, I'd imagine you were. Yeah.
Oh, danger! Danger! I think we've overlapped the time where we've basically finished and are now just blithering. Sorry, I think that was my fault.
Well, I think there's no better way to end this than with some blithering, because it's what we do best. So thanks very much again, and all the best, and have a lovely time. And
thank you, everyone.
Hey. Keep listening to Retronauts, please. That was meant to sound pithy, but it just sounded like a genuine plea. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye!
Okay.
That was the nuclear warning.
Oh, it was either the pips or you'd flatlined and died.